You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Could you imagine if it wasn't?
You've done this bit before.
I couldn't think of anything else. That's why I was silent. I was thinking real hard. I was thinking real hard of a bit.
We've been doing this for 7 years.
Yeah, I'm out.
Today we're going to be talking about the third and penultimate serial of the 26th and final season of Doctor Who, The Curse of Fenric, which consists of four episodes that aired from October 25th, 1989 to November 15th, 1989.
True facts!
I want to give a special thanks to Bill Lamond
for
becoming our newest Patreon patron. We were going to mention you earlier, but
became... But bad at it.
My brain's dumb. You became a patron during our hiatus, and then we came back from our hiatus, and I forgot. But anyway, thank you, Bill Lamond. You can follow him on Twitter at PastShelfDateJR. I guess that's PastShelfDateJr., but it's JR. And also, I want to give a special shout-out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Who?
Matt Golden.
Matt.
It's
me,
Matt Goldman.
Yeah, Matthew Goldman,
who is also here.
Woo! Hello.
Welcome back. You were just here.
I was just here, but you see, what happened was
you've not left.
Yes,
Matt's been here this whole time.
Yes, it's a parasite situation where I've been like living under your sofa. Which clean, please. Just like vacuum occasionally.
If you're gonna live under there, it's your responsibility now.
No, that's fair. That's fair. but no, I listened to the Ghostlight episode, and thanks to your cunning editing and canny post-production skills, I sounded much more intelligent than I am. So, since I enjoyed that, I'm going to return.
Oh, nice. Awesome. This one, I'm going to edit you so you sound terrible.
Awesome. I won't be on Survival then.
Oh. Fair enough. Can you just go ahead and just give me just like a whole bunch of like
survival
terrible opinions and just, I don't know, slurs or something so I can edit it together so you sound bad.
God.
No.
Fair enough. Anyway, you can check out Matt at Maggle.xyz.
No idea why you'd want to at this point.
After all the horrible things you've said. So how you been doing since Ghostlight?
Since a fortnight ago? I'm doing good. I mean, 2022 good, but good.
Fair.
Yeah. How are y'all? Because I feel like nobody ever asks you guys.
They don't. The bastards.
Yeah.
Nobody ever wants to know.
How does that make you feel?
Sad.
Angry.
A little horny.
Cursed.
That's just cursed. Always.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this episode is both cursed and horny.
Yeah.
This whole
podcast.
That's true.
If I had two words to describe this podcast, it'd be cursed and horny.
I was talking about this serial, but okay.
No, our show. You know that's our new promo. Cut it.
You know what you should name your new podcast? Cursed and Horny.
Then my parents might listen to it.
Let's not unpack Let's just move on.
No, they just like paranormal
stuff. They just
stuff.
Love it when you're horny.
Yeah, that too.
How do we get out of this?
Yeah.
What's that podcast they listen to?
Scared and Horny.
Yeah, Scared and Horny. That's what it's called.
Okay. I feel like it's there needs to be a podcast emergency button. Like when you have sunk so deeply into a space you just need to evacuate immediately.
I will tell you. So my parents do listen to this podcast. It's called Scared to Death. That's what it's called.
We don't need to be talking about other podcasts.
No, I'm not going to say anything about my opinion of that show. If people like it, it's cool. It's not my thing. But I bought my parents some cups from it. thing.
It says creeper peeper.
Creeper peeper. One says creep, one says peeper.
Yeah.
Also on their website is a for sale was a horse vagina.
I was not planning on doing a spit take. But also, I feel like that was the perfect time.
Yeah. It's not from that podcast. One of the hosts does a comedy podcast as well, because he's a comedian. I don't like this word, but I'm going to say it. You can actually use the code horsepussy to get, like, a percentage off of your purchase.
That's not what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Is it functional?
Presumably. Actually, they don't sell it. They sold out, so it's not available.
Okay, somehow that makes it worse.
It's a collectible.
We have got to talk about Doctor Who.
Where's the emergency button?
We are 7 minutes into this podcast and we're talking about horse pussy. We've got...
If you want to support the podcast, you can go to WatcherRassilon.com and use the promo code horsepussy.
I don't even know how to do promo codes. Okay, so let's talk about Doctor Who. Let's do it. Let's
Please, shall we?
The Curse of Fenric. Episode 1, which I have called the Penultima Machine.
That's so stupid.
It's the penultimate serial. There's the Ultima Machine in the episode. Anyway, Matt, do you have a title?
Well, first of all, I'm going to, for comedy reasons, judge you harshly for this title entry. My title for this one is Wolf Time, which is actually the original title of the ancestor of the script.
Yeah, there was it was Wolf Time, and then it was Wolves of Fenric. It was Wolves of Fenric for a very long time.
It was Wolves of Fenric while they were shooting.
Do you think somebody went, why is the serial Wolves of Fenric about vampires?
And they're vampires.
Ain't no wolves. I think they mentioned wolves once in the first episode, and then once at the end. I think Jonathan Turner was like, "You don't mention wolves enough for this to be the title." Yeah,
so enamored with Wolf Time, though.
There was a couple of promotional things that went out that said Wolves of Fenric.
Yeah,
on it,
weirdly, there was a wolf pussy.
You can't go down this road again.
Use promo code Wolf Pussy,
and they sold out. It's a collector's item now.
It comes with an optional sonic screwdriver.
Goddamn.
Bad wolf.
Yeah. Bad wolf pussy. Okay.
Myself. Okay.
Where were we?
Oh, we just named the first episode. That's all we've done so far.
God.
The first thing we see is some Russian soldiers. That's hard to say.
Russian soldiers?
Russian soldiers.
Where are they rushing to?
To the beach.
Toward a terrible font.
So bad.
They have the largest subtitles. It's supposed to be like ticker tape or something.
But it's only the Russian that looks like that.
But and also the actual ticker tape that you see in the episode that the Ultima Machine spits out does not even look like that.
No.
So thematically, I don't know where the hell they were pulling this from. It's like they got Chris Chibnall's font designers to come out.
I don't think there's been subtitles on this show for a very long time. I think there was
there
once.
There actually aren't subtitles. That's just the TARDIS.
The TARDIS is translating for the audience.
There's actually some parts in this where the TARDIS should be translating and does not. If you want to be a huge fucking nerd. But I'm not.
Maybe that's why the font is so ugly, because the TARDIS went to translate it and somebody had uninstalled the right font, so it just replaced it with the system default.
You've always got to migrate the font.
Yeah, because nobody wants to read that. I think, is the primary reason why they're almost immediately like, we're speaking English from now on. We don't want to use this font anymore.
Look at that font anymore.
But they row over a sunken Viking boat. We see like it's got like a... I'm going on a dragon head thing.
Prow?
That sounds right.
I'm trusting you.
I'm trusting me.
We have listeners who will correct us.
Yeah.
We have a listener who used to live on a boat, so...
He'll know.
Yeah.
So I'm going to confidently say prow and then not be on the next episode.
Hey, Steve Conway, is Matt right?
Does Matt know about boats?
Tweet Matt specifically.
Yeah. Leave us out of it. I'm stepping out.
E.M. Golden.
At horsepussy on Twitter.
So they're arriving on the beach. While they're arriving on the beach, the Doctor and Ace TARDIS in and arrive at a top secret naval camp during World War II. And Ace is dressed for the occasion. This is the first, maybe the only, I don't know what she wears next time. The only time that her outfit changes
outside of a little bit obviously, of Ghostlight. But one thing is, this story was actually supposed to be the first story of the season.
Before Ghostlight, yeah.
It was supposed to go Curse of Fenric, Battlefield, Ghostlight, Survival. John Nathan Turner wanted to push this one forward because it had monsters and vampires and it was going to air closer to Halloween.
Yeah, it was like October 25th was when the first episode aired, which is the least scary episode out of the four parts. Like, I don't even think there are vampires in the first part, are there?
No.
And I feel like Ghostland is also pretty spooky.
Yeah.
Ghost!
Ghost.
Ghost! There's no ghosts in Ghostland.
Ghosts that move at the speed of thought.
Oh my god.
Ghost lights that move at
Why
the speed of thought.
Why do we keep having Matt back? But yeah, what is she wearing? She's wearing like clothes. She's got a little bandana on, right?
She looks cute as hell.
A mesh thing. She looks period appropriate. That's the best I can give you. Another thing that, and you guys have watched these much more recently than I have, but I believe this is the first Doctor Who serial set in World War II.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh yeah, she's got that dress with like the like starched white collar over it. She's got that updo too, the like hairdo you would think about.
Yeah, I mean it's very stereotypical of that time.
And she's absolutely rocking it. And then later she's wearing her jacket over it, and it's just so good.
Yeah.
She has a split skirt. They're separate legs because they were afraid of the scene at the very end of the serial when she goes swimming, that it would not look great on camera.
So she's got, I love fake shorts.
Yeah.
Or fake dress, real shorts.
Yeah, real shorts, fake dress.
That's the best type of dress.
But yes, they arrive. They are soon surrounded by soldiers, and the Doctor and Ace quickly talk their way out of it. And just, they're like, we're here for a purpose. Take us to Dr. Judson. And they just take control of the scene immediately. I love them so much.
Ace in particular does. Like, I think it's a good sign of her growth. She immediately clocks onto what the Doctor's doing, and she's like, all right, I will take it from here, and just railroads the British soldier that she's talking to.
I actually do think this works better after Ghostlight than before.
Yeah.
I think it like, does.
It feels like it's a culmination instead of a...
The whole thing really has a sense of purpose that I don't think you would have felt as much if it had come earlier, which we'll get to in episode 4. But
back at the beach, one of the Russian soldiers, I've written his name down. I don't know why.
They're all interchangeable.
They're all interchangeable. The only one you really need to know is Soren.
And even then.
So one of the Russian soldiers who was supposed to have the orders has been pulled out of the water looking fucked up, looking shocked. He's pale. I think he's got scratches on his face.
He's got scratches on his neck, and he's bloated and pale. And
he was supposed to have the orders, and they don't have them, so they're going to go look for him, see if they're on the beach somewhere. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Ace meet Dr. Judson and his ableist nurse, Crane.
I love that so much of the serials about ableism. Do you know what else I really like about Dr. Judson? Is that he seems to, like, kind of catch on that, like, Ace and the Doctor shouldn't be here, but is, like, far too fascinated by them.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, wait. You understand this, like, you know, logic and computers, and I'm not saying a damn thing about the fact that you're not, that I just watched you forge a form in front of me.
Yes.
The Doctor gets two pins and signs both, like, two signatures right in front of them.
He types his own letter of recommendation and then, like, gets two pins, crosses his arms, and signs them simultaneously.
One of them's Winston Churchill.
One of them's Churchill, and one of them is a military person.
Head of something.
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Judson is just looking at him with awe, like, I want to see where this goes.
Yeah.
This person is fun.
I just like that, like, part of the reason why this works is this guy's innate, like, curiosity.
And he's based on...
he's basically Alan Turing. Just substitute homosexuality for being in a wheelchair.
And in the novelizations, is both.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Well, we're about to get to another character named Millington. It is implied in the episode itself that he has something to do with crippling Judson. But in the novelization, it is made more explicit that it happened. You know, like, there's that picture in Millington's office of the cricket team
right. That
both of them are in? Basically, Millington and Judson were in a relationship together, and Judson was looking at another guy in a way that Millington didn't like, so he just, like, very hardcore, like, hit him, like, on the field and paralyzed him.
Oh, shit.
Accidentally.
All right. I thought that they were just, you know, kind of taking that famous aspect of Alan Turing and literalizing the ostracization of it so that you could have a cliffhanger that we'll get to later, essentially. But, yeah, wow. Okay.
I mean, part of it, they did put him in a wheelchair because they were like, I think Jonathan Turner was like, we can't go into anything that deep about, like, homosexuality and stuff on a children's program. I think you could, but whatever.
Yeah. And, I mean, John Nathan Turner himself was gay.
Mm-hmm.
So, he probably had a good read on the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that, like, Judson is, like, super excited about this, he's like, you want to see my ultimate machine?
And then, it's like a little kid, like, you want to see my bedroom? It's where I keep all my toys.
And they're like, this is a little late. We're going to go to bed. And then we'll look at it in the morning.
His glee is really what saves that. Because otherwise, if somebody just, like, came up to you and you're like, hey, you want to see my Ultima machine? I would just kind of run.
I mean, if it's in the context of, like, a respected scientist, I'd be like, oh, sure, let's see your Ultima machine. And that's how they get you.
You never go to a secondary location.
But then they go to bed. Ace is very excited about bunk beds.
Oh, is this where we meet Kristen Schaal?
Not yet. Okay. You're not the only one who thought that, Craig.
Okay.
Captain Soren sends his man to find the orders, and one of them finds the like envelope on the shore, picks it up, and inside is a picture of Judson. Uh-oh, they're here to do something to Judson. The Russians are. And then he's sort of walking away, and then we get a POV shot of a monster that we can't see that's coming after this Russian, and he runs away in the most awkward manner I've ever seen. He's like, oh. That's the way I can audibly describe it. He swings his arms very low.
It's fully uncoordinated.
Yeah, it's very bad.
It's like he's off balance? I don't know. It's like he's full of sand and trying to run. But, like, full of sand as a person.
Yeah.
Perhaps this is why they're not doing great in the Ukraine right now.
Oh, we can't. I would rather talk about horse pussy.
So, the doctor and Ace, this is the following morning, I guess Sunday, church is over, and a Mrs. Hardacre is complaining to the Reverend Wainwright about his sermon and how it's bad and he should be better at preaching.
The problem that she has with the sermon that he preached was that he was not 100% rah-rah Britain in the war effort. He was basically saying, like, there's pain on all fronts.
War sucks all around.
Yeah, which we'll get to later. And what did you say his name was, Father?
Reverend Wainwright.
Reverend Wainwright. Okay, because I just call him Father Callahan from Salem's Lot.
Yeah!
Because he's basically that character.
I was about to say, this, like, we're in the era of Doctor Who where they can rip off Stephen King.
And he essentially, I mean, we'll even get to the vampires and the faith stuff later, but yeah, he's essentially Father Callahan.
I was very excited about that. Doctor Who's ripping off Stephen King. He's apparently played by a famous comedy guy?
Yeah, he did comedy and game shows, and he was very worried about taking this part, because he was like, I don't know...
People take him seriously?
Well, I don't know that I can perform the role with the gravity and the dramatic chops, because apparently he had done acting earlier in his career, but it was before he found fame as a comedian and game show host. I think he killed it. Like, he was fantastic.
Yeah, I watched the behind the sofa thing, and there was like one person on that who was watching and was like, I can't take this seriously because I know him from all these funny things. And I'm like, well, I'm glad I don't know that. Yeah. Like, I think he did great.
He did fantastically.
So right now, Miss Hardacre is railing into him, and the doctor and Ace come and sort of...
Yeah, they kind of rescue him from her, and she is terrible.
She
is the worst.
She has a lot of opinions. And she is also looking after two young women, Jean and Phyllis. What are they, like, refugees or something? Or what's their deal?
Yeah, I think a lot of times in the war at this point, children who lived in major cities would be sent off to these smaller country areas to stay with relatives, or, you know, their parents may have even been dead, and she may have taken them in as an act of Christian charity. But yeah, she's terrible.
And she's yelling at them to go. And like Ace has just met Jean and Phyllis, but they're already, like, best friends. This is a thing that happens with Ace a lot in this serial, is, like, she meets someone one time, and then, like, suddenly there's a connection. But I was like, oh, wait, Ace has had a girlfriend every episode, every serial. And it's like, is Ace gonna get two girlfriends?
No, they are incredibly hetero.
Still trying to make Ace straight. Don't get it.
Well, this is the same guy who introduced Ace. The guy who wrote this wrote Dragonfire, which is the one where he, in his original script, was like, she lost her virginity to fucking Glibolots or whatever.
Glibolots!
I called him something different, too, on the last episode.
Salmon? No.
Salmon Glibolots.
Savalon Glitz.
No, it's salmon, whatever you said.
Glibolots.
Could you imagine
what's that, the Gold
Glob
Gibbelab? to someone with a name like that? what is it, though? I can't remember his name.
Is it not Savalon Glitz?
Is it Savalon? That sounds made
Solomon
up.
Solomon.
It is made up!
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Savalon Glitz is his actual name. So I don't know what I called him on the last episode, but it was not that.
Well, they have to go. They're like, well, let's meet up later at Maiden's Point.
Which is a thing that Ace just picks at random. She sees a sign and she's like, what about there? And everyone's like, all right.
I think in a deleted scene, because they say Maiden's Point, and one of them's like, well, that cuts me and Jean out. Like, they can't go there.
Oh, yeah.
Because sex.
Oh, but also, I presume it was just a way to shortcut Ace getting there, but when they mention it, they point conspicuously to a street sign that says, Maiden's Point. And apparently that was somewhat anachronistic, because all of the street signs had been taken down to confuse enemy soldiers. But I guess someone ran out there and put one back up because it's like, shit, we got a time traveler here, and they're going to need to go swim in some sin.
I'm too Ace for this whole serial.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird sex stuff in this one. Some of it I think is fine. Some of it I think is fucking bonkers. But we'll get there. So now we finally meet Commander Millington. I thought he was just a straight up Nazi when we first saw him. Because
he is in a Nazi office.
He's in a Nazi, a replica of, we find out it's a replica of a Nazi office. Because he wants to think like them to figure out what they're up to.
Which apparently was a thing. There were British soldiers who would create these mock offices and surround themselves with Nazi shit in order to think like a Nazi.
Fucking method actors.
I find that highly suspicious.
Yeah.
What are they all, fucking Jared Leto? Get the fuck out of here.
I want to point out, I had a stronger sense that he was actually a Nazi than the Nazi who was in an office at the beginning of Silver Nemesis.
Yeah, they framed that swastika a lot better in this one.
Yeah.
There is some weird editing here. Because it like shows him in the office and it cuts to a close-up of his face, then to a different close-up. And it's because they cut out a scene where a guy comes in and like tries to talk to him, but he's so distracted that he doesn't answer him. And then the guy's like, well, I'll leave.
I guess you're pretending really hard to be a Nazi.
Really got your Nazi vibe working.
He also has a Viking chess set.
Did you say chess? Why, I've never seen this in Doctor Who before. I wonder if it would play into something.
The Reverend takes them into the church, says it's built on a Viking burial ground.
Ancient Viking burial ground. Which is what you get when you set your things in Britain instead of the US.
It's ripping off Pet Cemetery now. And he takes them to Judson, who's in the crypt, transcribing some Viking rune carvings on the wall. While he's writing them down, he's going to go translate them later in his Ultima machine, which has been deciphering German codes.
The Ultima machine is essentially the Enigma machine created by Alan Turing. It's doing, you know, important war shit, but Millington is like, no, runes.
Runes.
I want these runes.
I read somewhere that it's like, that machine, like, because they were the way it was doing it, would not have been able to, like, translate those runes.
Joseph. Are you suggesting that Doctor Who is not historically accurate?
Yeah.
How dare? How very dare?
I mean, I guess it is a different machine and it could have some fancy
features.
Right,
this is the Ultima machine, not the Enigma machine.
They're
so
different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one, they paid for the Viking rune upgrade.
Good point.
It's the expansion pack. The DLC's where they get you.
They leave to go to Maiden's Point, and the Doctor and Ace look at a sunken gravestone, which is big plot point that doesn't super matter. There's a bunch of dead names of dead people on it that'll has something to do with the Curse of Fenric. I don't fully understand it.
To clarify whatever it was that Joe just said, there is a tombstone, and there are a bunch of names on it with dates. Not dead names. Names of dead people.
Names of dead people, yes.
And they are all of a particular family line.
I'm now imagining a dead name graveyard. And I feel the need to make that happen.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, that becomes somewhat important later. But we get a scene of Hardacre yelling at Jean and Phyllis not to go to Maiden's Point because it's evil.
It's evil and they're evil for going.
Just because you've never been swimming.
Yeah. I was going to say, I love that this is the metaphor because it's just like swimming's a sin.
Swimmers are sinners. There's a deleted scene where, like, one of them, when they actually go to swim, one of them is, like, talking about how they feel tingly inside.
Swimming does?
Yeah.
And that's why it's a sin.
I guess so. Yeah.
It's a metaphor for fucking.
There's not a horse around.
I can't believe this has become the running gag of the episode.
If you had told me to come prepared for that, I would not have expected it. This is definitely a new wrinkle.
We've started this podcast with a bad energy.
Do you want me to send you a picture of it?
No!
Don't you touch that phone!
So, at Maiden's Point, Ace finds the Russian file that presumably that guy who was awkwardly running from the monster.
Is Maiden's Point not up?
What?
Maiden's Point. If I saw that on a hiking trail.
You would think it would be like an elevated.
Yes!
Yeah.
An elevated peak that you would like jump off into or something.
They used to say, and there's a later scene where the doctor is talking about it, and it used to be called Maiden's Bay, and they changed it to Maiden's Point.
Wait, I'm sorry, is that like a plot point?
Yeah, that happens in the episode. Someone says that. Okay. They're reading some translated Viking shit, and it says Maiden's Bay. And he's like, Maiden's Bay? And then he's like, well, they call it Maiden's Point now.
Well, another thing that is brought up in the episode is...
Is that part of the metaphor?
The tombstones and stuff are kind of sinking. Like, the land is not stable, so that may account for it going from being a bay to, like, oh, there's a little 6-foot point now.
I think it's also you want it to sound like Lover's Point or something.
Maiden's Bay sounds like a
spice.
Either that or a town in a Stephen King novel.
This is the Stephen King episode.
Maiden's Bay, you don't want to go out there.
I mean, that is what they say. But while they're there, they find the file that has, like, Judson's picture in it and everything. And the doctor takes it back to the church while Ace waits for Jean and Phyllis.
And Ace does not want to go in the water.
No, well, there's a big old sign that says, warning, dangerous undercurrents. Ace very helpfully points it out, even though it's, like, 9 miles.
Very specifically.
Look, it says... Dangerous undercurrent.
And the framing of that shot is just amazing because it's just her tiny in the corner and this huge looming sign. And she's like, yes, there's a sign that says dangerous undercurrents.
It's wonderful. And then Millington checks in on Judson, who is doing some code cracking. This is the first time we get to see the gigantic Ultima machine. And Judson's very excited about this and talking about how there will be more thinking machines in the future. And Millington says very dramatically, yes, but whose thoughts will they think?
And Judson doesn't really know how to respond to that. I don't think it's because he's got, like, a good argument against it. It's because it's such a dumb question that he's just, like, taking a moment, like...
Actually, I read a very interesting thing about this that I'm too dumb to understand. But it was in the TARDIS Eruditorum by Elizabeth Sandifer. And she had a whole thing about, like, the fact that people misunderstand what the Turing test is. You have to read it. It's good. I'm too dumb to understand, to like recite it now. But while I was reading it, I was like, that's interesting. And then it completely went out of my dumb fucking head.
The thing that it makes me think is like, whose thoughts will it think is actually a very good question, especially with like the technology we have now of like AI technology or like learning stuff where it's like, we're in a situation right now where people are like, we teach the AI and so it learns all of our biases. There was a while there where it was like, well, it can't be biased. It's a machine. And it's like, yes, programmed by a specific data set.
By squishy humans. It's like that AI chatbot that became racist within like 24 hours when they put it on the internet.
So like, who's whose thoughts is it thinking is actually a pretty pertinent question, the more machine learning that we have.
I should also point out that, yes, the Ultima machine is huge.
It's like takes up an entire wall.
Right, which computers at the time would. But also, it really just condenses down into this one little, like, suitcase-sized bit.
Yeah.
Like, that's the brain. I don't know what the rest of the shit is for.
Making that...
Yeah, because when the Russians come in, they're not going to, like, bring in a dump truck and haul the entire thing out. They're just going to pull out that one little box, the little brain box, and take it somewhere. So I don't really know what the rest of the shit's doing. It's all just for show.
Yeah,
it's all
to make you think it's harder to steal.
It's all to generate that font that we saw at the beginning of the episode.
But yeah, Phyllis and Jean go swimming. Ace watches them and gets mad and leaves. They keep calling her baby doll.
That's when I realized they weren't going to be girlfriends.
Yeah, they were mean to Ace. But Wainwright shows the doctor some Viking translations that have already been that he already had access to. And the doctor reads about a curse on treasure from the Orient that followed some Vikings to Maiden's Point. That's basically what is said. And that's when he's like, well, it says Maiden's Bay. And that's when he's like, Maiden's Bay? But he's like, yeah, well, they call it Maiden's Point. He's like, but that's where Ace is. And then Ace opens the door, like, on cue. And is like, yep, yeah, but I'm here right now. Which is very good.
Do you mean old Ben Kenobi?
And the doctor notes that the Russian files mention bringing the treasure back to Norway. Because the translations also say something about the North Way or whatever. Basically, there's a prophecy that is being fulfilled here. And then he heads off to find Justin Judson to tell him about it.
Justin Judson.
And then there was a scene that confused Tony where Phyllis and Jean are on the beach and one of them is drawing stockings.
Yes.
On the other one's leg. That's what they were doing.
That's not the confusing part. There's just like 8 pop culture references after that. And I'm like... Okay.
Not only are they like pop culture references, they are like 40s.
40s pop culture references.
I do not know them.
I don't even remember who they say. They were all like actresses.
Yeah, they were all Hollywood starlets at the time. And drawing a line was apparently a thing to make boys think that they were wearing stockings because it made them feel more grown up and sexy. So they couldn't afford stockings. They couldn't get stockings, but they would take a makeup pen and just like draw a line.
Okay.
So. You could see that on TikTok now. Just a makeup tip. Draw on fake stockings. They find a weird metallic thing that I don't know what it is and I don't think it ever gets explained.
That was a little doodad.
On the beach that makes them feel tingly when they touch it. There's a lot of tingling in
this to say, like...
I truly wish that we could ban the word tingling from Doctor Who.
And then they just leave it there. They are being watched by one of the Russians, though. And he goes up after they leave, gets the weird thing, and then just chucks it back in the water. Then a just big clawed octopus hand, almost said octopussy, octopus hand grabs the thing as it falls in the water. And then we see that there's also a dead Russian in the water who looks like French Stewart.
It's okay. He doesn't stay dead for long.
No, he doesn't.
He gets undead.
He gets undead. That's later.
I would like to say, too, that the underwater shots look cool as hell.
They look really cool.
This also, the dead Russian that's underwater, is a bit of a role reversal from the normal uncomfortable race issue in Doctor Who with casting. Because the white Russian underwater, not the drink, is played by a black man with heavy makeup on him.
What?
The reason being, when they went to go get that shot, he was the only person on the crew that was a certified diver. So they put, they caked makeup on him and submerged him. And it really worked because it made him look unnatural and kind of like his skin was pale and bloated. But
I can't believe it. Our first whiteface.
Yes.
I was about to say they did whiteface.
They did do whiteface.
Holy shit. Interesting. Wild. Then the Doctor and Ace meet a group of women. They're called Wrens on the...
Yeah, I forget. It's an acronym, and I forget the
WRN. They transcribe the coded messages that are being sent due to war.
Are you talking about the ones who literally just call themselves the girls?
Yeah.
Or like, they peek in, and they're like, hey, who are you? And the Doctor just says... Oh, we're just being nosy. Yeah. And their response to
come on in.
Come on in. We're the girls. It's like, is this not? Are you not decoding, like, secret messages? Should this not be highly classified? And it's like, I don't know who you are. Anyway.
To be fair, if I were working for Millington, I'd be like, fuck it. I don't care. This guy's a dick, as everyone is about to see.
So they meet Kathleen, who is the, I guess, the head of this group. As Matt mentioned, she looks like Kristen Shaw. She looks an awful lot like Kristen Shaw.
Very much like Kristen Shaw.
And Kathleen, or Kristen Shaw, has a baby, which Ace wants to hold, and does not hold the head. And the doctor's just like, oh my god, oh my god,
the doctor's please. Like, I'm not even a medical doctor, and I know you're doing damage to this child. Spoiler alert, this is why your mother is such a bitch.
Because she didn't hold her neck when she was a baby.
Like, I don't know if that was like on purpose. But it does look like Sylvester McCoy is just like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
It does. It doesn't feel like acting. It does feel like Sylvester McCoy being like, that is not how you hold a baby!
Watch the head. And she at no point holds this baby's head. At no point.
Ian Briggs, who wrote the script, specified that the baby of Kristen Shaw had to be a real baby, not a doll, because, quote, he liked babies and fancied having one to cuddle on location.
That's fucking suspect.
That's very weird.
Yeah, I like that. Also, fun fact about this baby, it's a local baby from a bar.
It's a fresh...
From a bar?
Yeah, they went to this like pub or whatever.
And the baby was just drinking there?
No, I mean, like it was somebody who worked there as baby. The baby was like perfectly fine with just a lot of noise. And they're like, this is great.
Okay.
It basically grew up in this pub.
Wow.
Yeah, so like, can we use this baby? And they're like, yeah.
Sure. No, we're not going to support her neck. But
I believe it was a boy baby.
It was a boy baby. But, it was a boy bee.
A boy bee.
But yeah, I think that's great. Like, that's the dream. Like, you can film a baby and be loud near it. Perfect.
That's the dream. Being loud near babies.
Well, I mean, you never work with kids and animals, and like, that cuts some of the problem down.
Or you could just shoot it with a doll if you don't have a writer who's got creepy shit in his script because he wants to cuddle a baby.
I don't know, though. I've seen some stuff where I'm like, where you can clearly tell it's a doll, and it's like,
just get a baby.
That, like, famously happened with that, was it American Sniper?
Yeah.
Like, Oscar-winning movie, and it's got, like, this fake-ass baby.
But also, that baby doesn't have internalized trauma to its head or neck. That doll doesn't. So maybe there is something to be said about the slight unreality of having a baby doll.
Ace is very excited about this baby and then is like, what's her name? And then Kathleen says, her name is Audrey. And Ace is just like, get this fucking child away from me.
Ace is like, I hate it.
That's my mom's name. And I was like, that's your mom.
But it's still played as a fucking reveal in the fourth episode. And it's like, no, we knew. Yes. We've known this. We've known since episode one.
The second you said, that's my mom's name, I was like, that's your mom. That's your literal. That's your literal fucking mom.
Actual ass mom.
Millington comes in and is like, get that baby out of here. Everybody just hates this baby.
And that's why it grows up to be so mean.
Yeah. All this negative
It just absorbed all those bad vibes.
And she's like, oh, I'll try to find something to do with it. Then the doctor and Ace sneak off because they're like, who the fuck is this dick? Let's find out more about him. So they sneak into his office. That's when we get explained that's a replica. There's a school photo on the wall of him and Judson. And there's the Viking chess set. And we get all of that firmly reestablished and explained.
Also, Millington's little Nazi stash was apparently another anachronism. They gave it to him specifically to draw that visual parallel between him and, you know, the shithead on the wall. British officers were required to be clean-shaven. I guess that kind of works as another little bit of, like, he's going.
Are you telling me that Doctor Who is historically inaccurate?
I have it on good authority that is the case.
So, Judson shows Millington the translations of the runes, and it says that evil will rise when the wolves of Finric, I say it once, return for their treasure. So
werewolves.
Wolf time.
No, not the werewolves. They're the descendants.
The wolves of Finric.
Are the Russians. Well,
they're not the Russians.
It's one Russian.
It's a Russian.
A Russian.
A white Russian.
He's not a werewolf.
It just really upsets me that this serial was going to be called fucking Wolf Time and it's about vampires. And I won't let it go.
There's a question as to where these wolves are. So technically they're werewolves.
Fuck off. Fuck right off. Oh my
That's the
God.
Smartest thing you've ever said.
Oh my God. Jesus.
Matt has a point.
A maiden's point.
I have a bay.
I used to have a point, but now I have a bay.
So evil will rise when the wolves of Fenric return for their treasure. And basically the end times are happening. They never say Ragnarok. It's Ragnarok, but they never say it because they didn't want to get it confused with
the gods of Ragnarok
from Greatest Show in the Galaxy. Then the Doctor and Ace find a dead Russian on the beach holding one of those weird metallic things.
So he just tingled too much.
He tingled to death.
That happens sometimes.
Maybe that's why the girls got all tingly when they went in the water. Because of the underwater welding.
Yeah. But then the Doctor and Ace are surrounded at gunpoint by the Russians. And that is the end of episode one. I don't think this was the intended cliffhanger.
No, it was.
It was?
It was. And I'll go ahead and say this. We all, for this, watched the transmitted version of the serial, which is the four episodes. There were actually 4.5 episodes worth of content. Andrew Cartmell suggested, let's make this a 5-parter. Because we've got a 1/2 episode worth of stuff that we don't really want to cut out, but we are too long. And the writer, Ian Briggs, was like, no, you will not fuck with my 3 very specific cliffhangers. That is the whole reason why there are gaps in this episode, was because Ian Briggs had to have these very specific 3 cliffhangers. And only one of them is really great.
Yeah, this one sucks.
This first one is crap. The second one, I don't even remember.
What's bad is, like, this cliffhanger sucks, but there's a moment that happens, like, a scene later that would have been a much better cliffhanger.
Far better cliffhanger.
Anyway, let's talk about it. Episode 2, which I've called something Tony said while we were watching it, Swimmers Are Sinners.
Swimmers Are Sinners.
I have called it The Ultima Foe.
The Russians are basically like, we're not going to shoot you. We're going to take you to Sorin. Our head dude.
Head Russian dude.
So then the cliffhanger that should have happened, Judson reads about the Vikings dying under the curse. Like, they're basically like, this curse is killing us. I'm the last one left. I'm going to die. And then that's
after having children.
I guess they've had to have had children, because if not, this is a plot hole, because a lot of this resides on these Vikings having descendants.
Presumably he has sown his seed.
This is about sex, y'all.
Are you okay?
The curse of Fenric is chlamydia.
Are you alright?
It's the most said that you've ever said.
You're welcome. But as he's reading about this, new carvings appear in the crypt. And then that dead Russian underwater, who's apparently in whiteface, comes back to life.
He's back.
That should have been the cliffhanger.
Should have been. Also, the runes appearing were supposed to be a practical effect.
Way too much smoke.
Yes, they couldn't see shit, so they just took a still and then, like, masked some shit onto it in post. But also, the runes that they put in do not mean what the runes that the Ultima machine spits out mean. They mean things like fecundity. One of the producers, I think it was maybe John Nathan Turner, was like, can we put, like, this much sex stuff in the runes?
There's sex stuff in the runes?
I know exactly what they say, because it was in the TARDIS Hereditorum. Leek, L-E-E-K, abracadabra, presto changeo, and leek. That's one of the lines. That's the one that eventually says, let the chains of Fenric shatter.
Why is it leek?
I don't know.
Probably a sex thing.
I think they just put random shit.
Yeah.
I think the
runes were chosen for their visual interest more than their actual meaning.
The Doctor convinces Sorin to delay his attack on this base. Well, first off, there's that soldier who's freaking out. He's got another one of those weird things. Weird metal things. Takes it away from him and sort of touches his head and calms him down. And then he's basically like, there's a bigger problem going on here.
Cute.
was very cute. He's like, basically, there's a bigger problem here. Let's take care of that before you do anything rash. And Soren, after the doctor helps his man, Soren's like, yeah, all right, I'll listen to you.
Yeah, and the doctor in this scene is wearing what McCoy termed his Paddington coat. The idea being, back when this was the first serial of the season, was that it was hiding his new darker jacket, and that was going to be a bit of a reveal. But then when this is 3/4 of the way through the season, it's...
He just had it was just there to, weird coat.
Yeah, he was just being warm in the frigid locations shooting. But also, I don't think we have talked about it, and I don't think the episode has talked about it yet. Despite the fact that the Russians and the British were on the same side in the war, the Russians are trying to steal the Enigma machine, or the Ultima machine. Basically because Millington is pulling the strings to get them to steal it. Nobody knows this yet, but that's why the Russians are there at that base. They are there to steal the Ultima machine, which is why they have secret orders, and it has a picture of Justin Judson. So yeah, it'll come into focus more later, but...
Speaking of Judson, he's in the crypt transcribing these new runes that he just assumes Millington forgot to get. He starts transcribing them. Then Crane just decides he's too cold and too feeble to be in here. So she just picks his ass up and carries him out. Rude.
He makes a very important distinction that he is not an invalid. He's a cripple.
And she's like, I'm not listening to you. And then you can't think for yourself, and then carries him away.
This woman truly sucks.
And the runic translation that he did originally began, now begins the wolf time. And when it was transmitted, it came out as let the chains of Fenric shatter.
Then Ace and the doctor go and look at the new carvings. And the doctor's like asking her about it. And she figuring it out. And she's like, it's a different alphabet. It's this, 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 and this.
Yeah, she does a lot of detective work. Like, just like that. She's on the ball. And she does miss the forest for the...
Yeah, it's
newly
like that,
carved runes.
It's like that Sherlock and Watson joke where he's having Watson deduct everything. Like, they've gone on a camping trip, and he's, like, talking about, like, with the star positions and all that, and just goes on all this detailed stuff, and at the end, Sherlock's like, yeah, but our tent's been stolen. The thing that she doesn't pick up on is, this wasn't here before.
Yeah.
Somebody comes into the room and then leaves while they're hiding, and they're like, where'd they go? Where'd they come from? There must be a secret door. So they start looking around for a secret door. Millington comes out of it as the doctor's just basically backing up into his gun. And then this is when the scene happens with the Reverend, where he quotes the Bible.
Describe the scene, and then I will tell you my feelings about it.
First off, we start in this amazing shot from the rafters and looking down as he's talking. And then we do like a slow push in on him as he's talking about the thing about like putting away childish things. And then he talks about faith, hope, and love.
And the greatest of these is...
And then it cuts.
This scene is delivered with the exact same cadence as Ace's flirting scene.
Oh, that weird David Lynch sexy talk that
I like this scene.
They're the same.
They're kind of the same, but I like this scene. I have weird feelings about the seduction scene. Because this is basically him losing it. He's basically lost his faith. That's what's happening.
He lost his faith when he, if I'm not mistaken, he saw German cities that had been destroyed by the British.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what kind of broke him and his faith. And this is the scene that I was talking about earlier, where he was worried about his dramatic acting ability, the actor was. Initially, the scene called for, at the end of it, he was going to break down crying at the pulpit. But after the fact, they decided that his performance was so strong that you got everything you needed to know just by him delivering the sermon, and that they didn't have to have that more obvious button on the scene.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was super effective. I thought it was a really good scene. I think, like, there was an interview with Ian Briggs, and he was talking about, like, when they were filming it, there was someone who was like, he's like, we'd done it in, like, rehearsal and the script and everything, and nobody really talked about this scene. And then, like, when they were filming it, there was a woman who was like, oh, this is like this is what this whole serial is about, sort of thing. And he's like, yeah, you get it.
Yeah. Also, again, he was afraid he wasn't going to be able to portray a religious figure with enough gravity and stuff. And it turns out that during a break in filming, he was so convincing that one of the local villagers came up and asked if he would officiate their wedding.
He also got a piece of his outfit from the local priest, like, as well, because he's like, "Oh, you need this bit." And he's like, "Oh, cool, nice." He's like, "You'll look better now."
That's adorable.
I think that's priest speak for "You look like shit right now, and I'll help you out. Hold on."
Stupid costume designers don't know shit.
Somebody's going to hell.
So then the Russians get into a fight with the British people here. Like, they throw a pebble as a distraction, and Tony was like, "How do they never go? I think the pebble came from over there."
It always works. Nobody ever sees from what direction the pebble was thrown.
Pebbles are inherently interesting, apparently.
I mean, that's true.
So, like, if a pebble moves, or there is motion to a pebble, you're not going to investigate where it came from. It's like, I want to see what this new rock is.
I mean, you know what? That would get me. If you throw a shiny rock my way, I'd be like, "Oh shit, look at that.
What's a rock?
Is that a crystal?"
Never go to war.
Wasn't planning on it.
They wind up murdering one of the dudes with their bare hands, I think. And like, some of them are excited about doing a murder. The one is sad.
Yeah, one's sad and one is like super stoked. Initially, the Russian soldiers were supposed to go and garrote the...
Ugh.
That was deemed too violent, but even after they toned it down, the BBC was like, okay, maybe don't have the guy, like, breaking the other guy's neck.
Like, I think he hits him in the face with a helmet is what happens.
Yeah.
War is hell, you know?
Also, I am very bad at military shit. That is a big blank spot in my knowledge base.
Same.
So I could not tell the Russian soldiers from the British soldiers because they all wear boring green.
They all look the same too.
They're all just generic.
I mean,
I can't
super see faces, but they all look the same.
There's one that's really cute, but outside of that, like,
and it's not the one that Ace has a crush on.
No, it's not.
And that makes me so mad.
Yeah,
it's the one with the hair, right?
They all have hair.
There's one that has like cute.
Oh
like,
yeah, he's
curly,
got like a little
hair.
Curly. Yeah,
yeah.
He's the, I think you're thinking of, his name is Bates.
I don't know their names.
He's one of the ones, like, right at the end who's like, "We're going to team up." Is that what you're thinking
of? No, I'm thinking of the Russian one there.
Oh. It was Russian.
I mean.
I don't
Blonde or brown know. Hair?
Brownish okay. hair, yeah.
Okay. I was thinking of the blonde guy. I think the blonde guy looks cute.
I thought the blonde guy was cute, too.
But, like, if Ace was going to have a random crush on one of them, on one of the Russian soldiers, like, it should have been that one, not Siren or whatever his name is.
Soren. Back in the crypt in the secret room, Millington shows the doctor a green poison that they've just been extracting from the walls. And then the doctor mentions a whole bunch of Norse mythology bullshit about, like, a tree and all that jazz.
There's a giant snake, a grand serpent, whose poison that drips from its fangs is this toxic goo.
Sure.
And it's so strong that it's even poisoned the world tree.
Because the doctor mentions all this stuff, that sort of convinces Millington that they're on the same side. And he's like... "Come with me, Doctor. I want to show you something.
Come to my bedroom. See all my toys."
"Come see my Ultima machine."
And then they start heading out, and then he's like, "No girls allowed." And Ace is like, "What the fuck?" But she had been wanting to check in on the Reverend anyway, so the doctor's like, "Just check in with the Reverend. If I'll be back in like an hour." So the doctor heads off with Millington, and Ace talks to the Reverend, who basically just straight up says that he's lost his faith and that he used to have hope for the future, but he no longer does.
He looks at Ace and says, "Have you ever read Stephen King?" It's a lot like that.
But then Ace says that the future is all right and to have faith in her.
Which makes sense if you know she's from the future. But if you don't, it just seems kind of arrogant.
It does.
Also, Millington 100%, if he were around today, he 100% would be one of those people online that gets way too into like Viking shit and uses that as a pathway to Nazism.
I mean, that's exactly what he's done here.
Yeah.
Millington shows the doctor the Ultima machine, and then he just says that he's going to let the Russians steal it because he's placed a poison bomb inside of it. He's got one of those green vials, the green liquid. Then we get a scene of Hardacre condemning Gene and Phyllis to hell for swimming. As
you got the swimming tingles.
You know, coming from the South, this seems legit.
I bet you danced, too.
You danced in the water. Synchronized swimming. I know what you're up to.
There was a boy in that water. Now, he was dead, but still.
Oh, that's even worse.
That is worse.
Yeah.
But then back to the Millington Doctor plot. They're in a room with a shit ton of bombs.
Which set is kind of cool.
It is kind of cool.
Which was named by the cast and crew as the Nipple Factory.
Amazing. And then he's like, I'm going to show you how this shit works. And he gets a whole cage full of doves, puts them in a room, and then kills them with the green vial, breaks some of it, and just fills the room full of green smoke.
Because what a subtlety.
And he's like, can you imagine, like that's just a little bit of it, how much, like, a big thing of it would, like, just take out cities.
Can you imagine how many fucking doves I could kill in this entire room? Just extinct in 24 hours. I fucking hate doves.
I hate what they represent.
I hate that they shit everywhere. I hate when they carry olive branches. I hate it.
It tastes pretty good, though, and they make a mean bar of soap.
Their chocolate's not nearly as good to bathe with, though.
That got me.
And then he says that the machine, the ultimate machine, has been programmed to explode when it decodes the word love.
Love.
That was the end of the verse. We didn't get to hear.
My thing is, like, what if one of those fucking runes said love? Would they be fucked? Would they be fucked?
Or if the machine just mistranslated something.
Right? What if it was like, the bad guys have gloves?
Yeah. Radiation gloves?
Radiation gloves, yeah.
Or like, hey, I really think you should check out this H.P. Lovecraft guy. Real racist, but also, all the world's ended now, so it's fine.
And then back in the crypt, a wall just glows and falls apart. And there's a hole there. And this guy comes up and he's like, is this one of our things? And he pulls out this flask. And then this other guy's like, no, that's not our thing, just leave it. So he just chucks it to the ground.
Why does he throw so hard?
Well, the reason that the other guy says, no, it's not one of ours, is because he specifically asks, does it say property of government on it? And the guy's like, no. I was like, all right, fine, fuck it then.
It doesn't smash, but he does chuck it super hard.
Also, that wall did not come apart like it was supposed to. There was somebody on the other side poking it with a stick. No. During the break between filming, one of the local masons had come in and looked at it and was like, that's an eyesore, and actually bricked it up.
Oh, no.
So they went to blow it, and it was just like, it's not happening. What? Shit.
That's fucking funny. So, oh, by the way, Hardacre took Gene and Phyllis's swimming clothes away, so they can't swim anymore. But Gene and Phyllis have a nice little loophole around that. They go swimming in the clothes.
Thank goodness. Because initially, as we are about to see, when they go and swim and get attacked and turn into vampires, they would then be in their bathing clothes the entire time.
Yeah.
Which would not be as threatening, I feel.
It'd be a lot sexier.
Would it?
I didn't know that vampire rules were like ghost rules.
No, it's just like, I mean, I don't think they're going to, like, change after they become vampires. I mean, they change into vampires.
But, like, they'd have to go get the clothes. Like,
yeah.
This is just more convenient. But, yeah, they go swimming in their clothes and disappear in a mist.
That white mist that rolls in and obscures them and then they're gone was written to be a black mist because it was supposed to be unreal and creepy. And they realized, oh, black mists are toxic. So we can't do that. We're just going to have a white mist.
Good choice. Fucking Ian Briggs, man. Just making some weird fucking requests.
You need some black mist and a baby.
And this weirdly specific cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So Millington orders communications to be disabled and all of the chess sets burned. Destroy all the chess sets, which is a weird request. What is he, Ian Briggs? Hey, I brought it back.
Now, I don't know why Millington demands the chess sets be destroyed.
Because he doesn't want the doctor to be able to play chess very easily, right?
Does he even know about the chess game, though?
That's the only thing that makes any sense.
I don't remember him having knowledge of this concept of the game that Fenric and the doctor are playing.
He fucking hates chess.
Yeah, he may just be like more of a checkers man.
Is he one of the cursed people?
He's not a wolf.
No. But I mean, he knows a lot about the mythology and stuff. And there is a scene where I think he does know about the chess because he has the chessboard in his thing. And he knows that the doctor's going to come for it at one point. And he does.
Oh, that's right. And he booby traps it.
So I think he does know some stuff. I think he's purposely trying to get Fenric. And I think he knows that the chess set can stop Fenric.
He wants to bring about Fenric because,
and I think he knows that Fenric can be stopped by a chess.
With chess.
It's his one weakness.
I mean, to be fair, I'm terrible at chess. I don't remember how to play. There's too many rules.
I'll tell you.
Can't remember how
I don't know how you play it, but I'm pretty sure this thing at the end is bullshit.
Oh, where the pawns team up?
Yeah.
I don't remember learning that when I learned the rules of chess, but...
This is the end. Yeah. Tell it.
Yeah, okay, so, like, the doctor sets up a certain little puzzle, and is like, you can beat me in one move. And, like, there's no... Okay, I know chess is very complicated, but there's not that many options that this guy's been thinking about it for 7 fucking centuries.
Maybe he also is just specifically very bad at chess.
But then Ace's solution is that the pawns from both sides team up? And I'm pretty sure that's
the
not...
The pieces team up.
In the rules of chess. It's
yeah, not. So basically...
I'm really with 100%...
The trick is, you gotta cheat.
100% with all my heart thought that... Because they were talking about war when, like, Ace figures it out, and I was like, oh my god, the only winning move is not to play.
Oh, that's some war games.
I thought that was going to be the solution, 100%.
Was war games out by this point? Probably was, wasn't it? This is 89.
Yeah, I think war games was around 85, 86, maybe.
It was like a very early Broderick film.
I was really, really disappointed that that wasn't it.
Yeah, it turns out the only winning move is to just invent shit that doesn't exist in the game. I guess.
Nothing in the rules against cheating.
Nothing in the rules against unionizing.
I think that may be a Ray Friesen line that I just stole. Nothing in the rules against cheating.
That 100% is a Ray Friesen line.
Back in this episode, Kathleen asks the doctor if he has any family, and he says, I don't know.
Yeah, but he doesn't say it like that. He says it very sadly. He says it very mournfully.
And she's like, oh, because of the war? She's like, sure.
The time war.
I did enjoy that scene. I thought that was very sad. Because he's kind of like, I don't want to talk about this. Yeah. And then sort of walks away. Phyllis and Jean rise out of the water as vampires with some cool new nails.
Yeah, they got their nails did. While they were under the water. So yeah. Apparently the Ancient One can not only weld underwater, but he can also do a mean manicure.
There's a Russian soldier on the beach, and they're like, come in the water. You know you want to. No one ever says no to coming in the water.
No one makes you come in the water, but you do. They have so much dialogue.
They do.
It's all talking about sex.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, given this story's predilections, coming in the water is probably different than what we're thinking of. But also, during this scene where the murder ponies summon the Russian out for a bit of death, it nearly had to be reshot because there was a bystander singing out loud, Doctor in the TARDIS, a hit 1988 single by the Time Lords. And he was just singing it in the background. And they went back and they listened to the dailies and they're like, okay, I think we can remove it in post.
What's the dialogue they say? They say a lot of like very metaphorical, sexual shit. Were you aware that it was sexual while watching it, Tony?
No, I just thought I just thought it was weird.
The whole
episode.
And then
you were reading the TARDIS Auditorium, and I was like, that's all the weird stuff I didn't understand. It was like grade school to high school all over again.
There was a lot of sex dialogue in this story that feels like it was written by someone with no concept of sex.
The thing is, I think some of this sex stuff is good, and I think part of the problem is performance, but...
Yeah, I'm not crazy about the murder ponies.
You don't like the vampire girls?
No. The...
Oh, they say, yes, a man.
A man.
Are you looking at us? Yes, he's watching us. He's got to come in the water with us. Yes, you've got to come into the water. It's warm. Blood warm. Nobody's forcing him. Nobody ever forces you to come into the water. But everybody wants to. Deep down, everybody wants to come into the water. Come on, come play with us.
Some of us are ambivalent about the water.
Yeah, this is definitely written by a horny dude.
These do not feel like words written by a human being. I'm not talking about someone who's like approaching it from like asexuality. I'm talking about somebody who doesn't understand the concept.
I mean, I do think that, like, all of the dialogue, all of these scenes are so metaphorical. Like, they're so abstracted that they don't sound like people talking.
Yeah.
Ace's scene especially feels like a dream.
It does.
It feels like it runs on dream logic. This feels like it runs on dream logic. Mm-hmm. And I think that is partially because it is so, like...
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The whole thing is like,
yeah, I mean, they're talking about, like, I think they're talking specifically about, like, repression, like, sexual repression, and, like, everyone's like, oh, sex is bad and we can't talk about it, but literally, they're like, it's saying, like, everybody wants to have sex, but we're not allowed to talk about it because it's the 40s.
But even still, it's just, it doesn't come across as human beings speaking.
No.
Word. Like,
well, they're not human beings anymore. They're,
yeah, but even still, Ace is...
Hemophones.
Ace is still human. When she says all of her David Lynchian dialogue.
I have some thoughts on that when we get to it.
Are they your thoughts? Or
they're my
they...
thoughts.
Oh, okay. I thought this was more TARDIS editorial.
No. Elizabeth Sandberg does love it. I don't love it as much as she does, but I know what my problem with it is. Anyway, they lure this guy in and he gets dragged down by other vampires.
Who could have foreseen?
Literally anyone.
What
happens when you have sex?
This is what happens when you think with your dick, you know?
Come into the blood water.
It's blood warm.
Actually, maybe that's my new title for the episode. Come into the blood water.
Please. I don't know if I want to ask.
I will let you decide how it is spelled.
Damn it. So, Ace figures out that the inscriptions are not only a language, but they're also a logic diagram like the toy she played with. And this gets Judson all riled up. And he's like, hell yeah, cool, I'm going to go figure this out then. If it's not just runes, it's also a logic puzzle. It's a computer program. Then Jean and Phyllis... go and kill Hardacre. They're like, you know, this is for not letting us swim. Fuck you. And then they drain her of blood. But the doctor and Ace come up to the house, to Hardacre's house. And I don't know what the fuck happened in this scene because I was so distracted because there was a good dog boy in the background that just like rushes by behind him.
That was John Nathan Turner's dog. Its name is Pepsi.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a great dog name. It's like a little, is it a golden retriever or something? He's very blonde.
Yeah, it's kind of shaggy.
Yeah, it's like cute though.
Kind of a long-haired dog.
I'm surprised they like let that stay in shot because it is very distracting.
The alternative would be to reshoot a scene. We don't do
that
here.
We're not doing that.
That's true. Anyway, they go in, they find the dead body, and
justifiably,
and they're like, oh.
Yeah.
Who cares? She was a dick.
Yeah.
But it is bad that I guess something killed her. Like, there's something out there killing people.
The next person they kill might be someone we care about.
And, in fact, maybe it is. Gene and Phyllis come for the Reverend. He's just standing out in the graveyard. That shot looks cool as hell when he's like, they're coming up behind him. And he's like, he's in the foreground, they're way in the background. And he starts talking to them without like even looking at him. He knows that they're coming for him. He holds up his Bible, like, my faith will stop you. And then they're like, you don't have faith anymore. You stopped believing when the British started bombing German children. He's like, you're right. And then the doctor shows up and is like, leave. And they're like, okay, but we'll be back.
I still don't understand why that works.
Well, the doctor had faith in something.
Not at this point.
This is a later scene.
Where
he has faith. At this point, he just says,
Get
out of here. And they say, we will. And then they leave.
But we'll be back.
It's 3-2.
Yeah. The script had it written as Phyllis and Dillis, whatever their names are.
Phyllis and Gene.
Yeah. The fog was supposed to float in, and they were supposed to drift along with the fog, essentially.
Ooh.
That's cool as hell. How the fuck are you supposed to film that?
Well, they were going to have more fog. The fog machine began malfunctioning, and instead of spewing fog, it spewed flames.
Oh.
And they were running out of time to shoot the scene. They were running out of daylight. And so they were like, fuck it, we're just going to shoot it. We need the daylight more than we need the fog. But apparently there was a jet of flame shooting out of the fog machine.
That'd be rad. Leave that in. So as Judson and Millington attempt to decipher the logic inscription, the flask in the crypt starts to glow green, so you know that it's up to some shit.
Crafty flask.
The doctor and the Reverend and Ace are heading back, and then like the doctor's like, we should be fine as long as... Like, Judson's never going to figure out what the inscriptions actually are, so we're good. And then Ace is like, oops.
You
should have told me. Stop leaving me in the dark.
She was like, so proud of herself that she figured that out. And she raced and told Judson. And
she literally, she says like the dumbest fucking line too. Where she's like, Paravail 600 million.
Yeah, Universe 0 or something.
Yeah, she's super proud of herself.
Also, when they were walking in the forest, her line there, where when the doctor says, he'll never figure it out, and she realizes that she has told him, and she's like, the line as written was hell. And they decided that they couldn't say that for some reason. It was too strong because it was a children's program?
What?
I don't know. You had a guy, like, get his neck broken. You have guys that are, like, succumbing to vampussy. Like, but hell is a step too far.
Weird lines we draw.
Anyway, some more vampires rise out of the sea. Two of them are Sylvester McCoy's children.
Yeah, they're the little baby vampires. They came to visit him on set.
And then Jonathan Nathan Turner's like, you guys want to be in this? We'll put some shit on you. And they got all made up. They don't look like vampires. They look like octopuses. They got like weird like suckers and stuff and on their faces and everything. And they're all dressed in like different period clothing. It's pretty cool. They look pretty neat. And then the Ultima machine starts, I guess he's just figured out the logic thing, and it spits out a bunch of names. It's the names from the names on the gravestone and all that shit.
But, it's the names of the wolves.
The wolves of Fenric. And the Doctor and Ace...
This is where they are.
The Doctor and Ace try to come in and turn off the Ultima machine, but they can't. Cliffhanger.
Yeah, Millington's like, it's too late.
But, this is another kind of weak cliffhanger.
Yeah, the InfoTrack in specific pointed out that a lot of the cliffhangers of this era didn't focus on a plot hit, but rather the Doctor's horrified reaction at something. And that's what this one is, and it also kind of deflates it a little bit. So, Mr. Briggs, two of your three cliffhangers are not worth not having another episode for.
That's the end of episode two. We're now into episode three, which I have called Companionable Faith.
Oh, I have called it Prince of Darkness. The John Carpenter film Prince of Darkness involves the discovery of Satan, who is an evil green goo that's in a canister, which is very relevant to this episode and
does
the story.
It glow in the dark and mutate turtles?
I don't think it mutates turtles. It does mutate people. Like, they become vampire-y type things. Vampire-y zombie things.
Cat got a potato chip. Mine is something that happens in this episode that is probably one of the best things that I've seen. It's my favorite part of the serial.
If you're a patron, you should go and you should probably watch our reaction to that scene.
I will say, if we weren't watching it with subtitles, I would not have caught it at all, because it is drowned out by music. So no one can, they're like, we need to call out, but they can't because all the radios have been destroyed.
Yeah, they actually walk in on the cutest British soldier, and he's so proud of him, so he's like, he is hatcheting the fuck. He's just going full Jack Torrance, another Stephen King drop, on the communication machines, and he turns around and he's so proud of himself. He's like, yay, I did the thing that you told me. And the Doctor's like, now put them back together.
I feel like he could have just unplugged them. I feel like there was a way to, like, disable them that wasn't destroying them with a hatchet.
I don't know. I mean, something similar happened with Dr. Strangelove, where they're like, destroy all of the communication device. And when they said destroy, they meant destroy. But yeah, he just goes full Jack Torrance on that shit.
You have anything to add, Joseph?
No. I had to stop the cat from eating a potato chip.
So you're eating a potato chip now?
I'm actually eating chocolate chips.
Oh.
And then the Doctor... explains to Reverend and Ace what these vampires are. They're not actually vampires.
They're werewolves.
No, they're hemivores, which is actually a pretty cool name.
Homo hemivorax.
What?
Yeah, the official scientific terminology that was invented for them was Homo hemivorax, blood-eating hemivores that Homo sapiens evolve into thousands of years in the future.
Right, because the Doctor says, yeah, these are from the far future, that humans eventually turn into this because pollution and shit. We fuck up real bad and we turn into these vampires.
And now, the reason that they are called hemivores is because Briggs was asked not to use the word vampire for the creatures because it was felt to hold, quote, too strong a connotation for younger viewers. Now, these creatures...
What?
Drink blood.
They literally call them vampires.
They are horrifying looking. They refer to them as vampires multiple times. They work on vampire rules. this whole thing was shot and staged based on where Dracula, where he landed on the Demeter.
The thing that Ian Briggs said was that they didn't want to just use vampire because that's like too, that's not Doctor Who enough, basically. It's not science fiction enough. It's kind of too magical or whatever. So to give it this sort of scientific explanation is right. Why they decided it's not vampires, it's hemivores. So that's what he said in the interview.
It's a little science fiction.
Yeah, which is basically just science fiction for vampire.
Do the hemivores come back in New Who? Is that what the vampires of Venice are?
No, they are...
They're completely separate fish vampires?
Yeah, they're fish people. Which it feels like they're...
Why are all the vampires in Doctor Who fish?
Well, these are also not the first vampires that we've seen in Doctor Who. Yeah, they were the vampires true. From
the one with the ship,
the E-Space trilogy or whatever it was.
Yeah, the one with the ship.
Sure,
there's a ship in it.
We'll go with
the
that
castle
one.
Was actually a spaceship.
Yeah,
that was super rad.
State of Decay.
Yes,
but yeah, I don't know what their origin was, but I think all of the different vampires in Doctor Who have wildly different backstories.
Well, to be fair, those were in a different universe. Anyway, the Reverend is going to go research the Viking names that the machine spit out while Ace wants to go check on the baby.
She still hasn't figured out it's her mother.
When she gets there, Kathleen is very upset, and Ace just reads an entire fucking letter. Even at the point where she realizes why Kathleen is upset.
And she keeps going.
She just keeps going.
She is going
sincerely,
to...
Sincerely.
She is going to milk... that emotional damage to Kristen Schaal as much as she can.
It's basically Kristen Schaal's husband is dead.
Or missing, presumed dead.
Oh, wait. That's not this scene.
It's not.
I jumped way ahead. This is the scene when she first mentions her husband.
Oh, okay.
My brain's just like, we gotta be further along in this, right?
God, this is also the scene where Ace is like, I never thought I'd get married, but now I'm considering it. And I'm like, you
yes,
are? With
yes.
Who? Why?
Would you like to share with the class?
And I think it's like supposed to be, like, in, I guess you're supposed to guess that it's Soren, but that doesn't make any sense. They've had one scene together where they don't even talk to each other.
Right.
But I don't think the Soren thing was intended. I think that's something the actors did. I think this scene was just meant to be that she's not opposed to the idea anymore. More so than I specifically know someone I want to... What was I saying?
Marriage.
I think that this is part of...
Mallet.
More part of that theme of like...
Growing up,
putting away childish things.
Well, she knows that maybe she has learned that in the future, gay marriage will be allowed in England. And she's like, no, I'm considering it.
Yeah, that's the canon.
That actually tracks.
Somewhere off screen, the doctor is like, no, it's fine. You know, they'll come to their senses eventually.
Sorry for jumping the gun on the death thing. We didn't even set up that the guy was alive.
Yeah.
Because Ace is all like... Wait, you have a husband? She's like, I've got a baby. And she's like, so?
Yeah, she gets really offended that...
I actually thought, too, that part of the scene was, like, that she knew it was her mom. And so she was kind of like, she knew that her grandma raised her mom alone. And so she was like, oh, yeah, sorry, you're in the past. That hasn't happened yet.
Ace hasn't figured this out.
Yeah.
She should.
Ace can look at a set of Viking runes and determine at a glance which alphabet they're using... And she has not yet puzzled out that as a time traveler, this baby that she's holding that has a surprisingly similar backstory to her own mother and who shares her mother's name might, in fact, have some relation to her mother.
It's in that forest again. The doctor and Ace go into the crypt to look for something evil. Because she's like, what are we looking for? And he's like, it's a treasure from, you know. And then she's like, can you be more specific? And like, I don't know, just look for something evil. And then just... drops an entire box on his foot and does a comedy hop.
Yeah, that was unscripted. That was Sylvester nice. McCoy just clowning around. Now, there are two major Kristen Schaal Ace scenes. There's the one that we just talked about that, I guess, sets up the husband, and then the one later on that kills the husband. Oh no, he was my favorite character. I was deeply invested in his well-being. One of those, I believe, is where she starts down the path of talking about Gabriel Chase again.
Oh, it's in neither of those scenes.
Oh, which one? Where is that?
That's way towards the end, right before they leave.
I feel like that could have been cut, because we've already dealt with Gabriel Chase. You know, that was clearly a remnant from the before times when this was going to open the season. I feel like we could have reclaimed that time to... stick in some of the other bits.
I mean, this scene's fine, but yeah, it doesn't need to be there.
I mean, it's cool as a callback. It's a cool little Easter egg because you can watch it and go like, oh, I know what they're talking about there.
So they're looking for this evil thing, and Ace immediately finds the flask and puts it in her bag, but doesn't tell the doctor about it because they get distracted by the Reverend's like, I found the names. They're the Viking descendants.
And she also puts it in her bag for no discernible reason. Like, she doesn't think it's the thing.
Does have a reason.
She's going to use it to make explosives.
Oh, later. That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Because like, this guy, she can see the green goo. She's like, oh, yeah, I can. Which, what the fuck are you making Nitro 9 out of?
I don't know.
This is mystery goo. And you're just like, I can make Nitro 9 out of that. Like,
well, I don't think she's making Nitro 9 out of what's in it.
I think she needs a container.
She needs a container to make the Nitro 9
in. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes more sense. I don't think the flask is full of goo. It's full of, I don't think.
I mean, it's full of evil.
It's full of Fenric. So then they're talking and then Ace is like, there's water on the floor.
Oh yeah, Father Callahan's like, yeah, the roof leaks, it's fine. The audience is like, yeah, I'm sure that's the case.
What? He's like, he gives specifics, like, it's like only when it rains and there's a wind from the east. And the doctor's like, it's not been raining and there's a wind from the west. But it's been
it has
fucking
been
raining. It's been raining.
It has been raining. That was like a major thing. And in fact, when they had that scene outside where the doctor was explaining what hemivores were, it was raining. This is the first time that he was actually able to use that umbrella for a reason because it was legitimately raining. And so he was like, well, fuck it. I've got an umbrella. I'm not going to get wet.
There's like so many scenes of like, it was raining when it wasn't supposed to be.
Yes. The weather would not cooperate.
Fake it later. They just have like a hose that they move over the camera. You can tell that everybody else is fucking dry and it's just raining right in front of the camera.
But like Sylvester McCoy was like, I've got this umbrella. It's raining. I'm going to use it. And the sound recorder was like, fuck. And you can hear it in the episode. Mm-hmm. You can hear the mic picking up every single drop that's hitting that umbrella.
And you can't see the rain really either. Because, like, rain doesn't actually show up on camera very well. When they do rain on film, they have to, like, make the droplets bigger so that it's visible.
Cows don't read as cows on screen. You gotta paint horses.
He's like, yeah, but it's not been raining and there's a wind from the west. And then vampires try to burst in. They try to keep them at bay. Ace goes up to the roof and then climbs down with her convenient backpack ladder, which she hasn't used since Dragonfire. This scene terrified me because I'm terrified of heights. They put like, I guess, whatever the 80s equivalent of a GoPro was on.
Yeah,
they
had a mini camera that Ace's or Sophie Aldred's stunt double was wearing.
Oh, I hated it. I did not like that shot.
Well, and also, I presume that this was cut for budgetary and time reasons, as most things were. But the vampires, hemivores, were supposed to pursue Ace by crawling headfirst down the wall like Dracula does, which would have been incredibly eerie. But instead, they just kind of appear on the lower level and want to give her like an evil hug. Also, the hemivores were supposed to have metal talons fingernails.
Jonathan Turner didn't want to do that because he's like, that seems too nightmare.
Yeah, he didn't want them to be compared to Freddy Krueger, which I'm like, there are worse things for your evil monster to be compared to.
You're already ripping off Salem's Lot. But yeah, she gets grabbed at the bottom, but she is saved very slowly by Soren and his men. They jump up there. He says a line and then they're like, what? And then he sort of repositions himself. It's the most awkward choreography. I don't know. But then they start shooting the vampires, which doesn't work. But like Ace climbs back up the ladder and they follow her up. In a deleted scene, we see that they get staked. You don't see them being staked, but you see the result of them being staked.
Ah.
You just see like melted bodies and big wooden stakes coming up out of the middle of them.
All of the 10 or so hemivores that are pursuing them are people who have been killed by the Ancient One in the water, like they've fallen in the water or whatever, and been turned into hemivores by the Ancient One. And they're all from different time periods, which is articulated in how they're dressed. And there's one that has like a Shakespearean ruffle around his neck, and he never fails to make me laugh.
A couple of them aren't from the sea. A couple of them are from the grave, the sunken grave, too. the vampires break their way into the church. The reverend's freaking out, and the doctor's like, you just have to have faith, have faith. And then he just, like, walks right up to the camera, and the music is so loud you can't hear him, but we could see it in the subtitles, and you can see it on his, as he's saying it, he's like, Ian, Barbara.
He does not say
He actually
Ian.
Does. I looked, oh, he does say, I think he does say Ian. He says, Ian, Barbara, Susan, Vicky, Steven.
He literally picked all the best ones.
I mean, he picked the first ones. His faith is in his companions.
Yeah.
The vampires so screech and back away. And that's, oh my God.
That wasn't just a bad mix. That was intentional because McCoy delivered the lines. But in post, John Nathan Turner was like, the people that are watching today probably aren't familiar with these companions that were here, you know, 25 years ago. Because at the time, you didn't have really repeats or, you know, the episodes available like you have them today.
So, did that shit all during the Fifth Doctor and Sixth Doctor era, though.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, once in this latter chunk of the Seventh Doctor, there's still a lot of ties to the older series, but they're not gratuitous references like they were in that era. So maybe it wasn't John Nathan Turner, maybe it was Andrew Cartmell, but someone decided, like, he's going to be spewing out a bunch of names, and there's going to be an entire audience that does not know who these people are, like why he's saying these names.
I know why he's saying those names, and I think it's fucking adorable.
It makes me weep.
Yeah, while we're watching it, if you are subscribed to our Patreon at the highest level, you get to see our live streams, and we are just like fucking just losing our shit over that scene. It's so good. Soren is going to go back through the vampires, trusting in his faith in the revolution to get through, while Ace and the Doctor and a couple other dudes are going to go a different way. And then this is when Soren gives Ace his scarf. Like, we're in love or something.
Yeah, here's a love scarf.
And yeah, that was like improvised. And apparently he was like, it was also a big problem continuity-wise.
Yeah.
Also, it's stupid. They've had no scenes together. They've had one scene where they were not even talking to each other. I hate this. Anyway, his faith does effectively get him through the vampires. He gets his way out. And they cut back to it now and again. And he's like holding up his little Russian...
his little badge. Communist party symbol or pin thing.
Then Ace...
I think that Ace is just communist.
Hell yeah. Then Ace blows a hole in the wall with some Nitro 9.
And the British soldiers who are trying to, like, poke their way through it, or maybe they're Russian soldiers. Russian soldiers? I don't know.
Russian.
They're social. Yeah, they're soldiers. But there are a couple of dudes who are trying to, like, dig their way through it, and Ace comes in, and she's like, this is a job for a girl, and she, like, starts getting out her explosives. And there's one of the soldiers that is just so fucking delighted at this. The look on his face is just like... it is Christmas morning.
That guy knows what's up.
That guy has more chemistry with Ace than fucking yeah. Soren. They blow a hole in this wall. They go through a tunnel. The two men that are with them head back because they hear something. The Reverend's with them as well. That's when Ace is like talking about how she wants to make more Nitro 9. And she's like, I'll make it in this flask. And the doctor's like, yeah, wait, what? What?
You dummy, that's what we've been looking for.
Yeah. Like, oh, sorry. The Doctor, Ace, and the Reverend get out of the tunnel, and then Millington has the doors slammed shut, like, immediately. And then they're like, no, there's two guys still in there. And he's like, I don't give a shit.
Fuck them.
He's like, I remember one time that I let some dudes die in a fire, and it was absolutely horrible. You gotta do that shit sometimes.
But like, after
their screams were awful.
After an hour, they stopped screaming.
Yeah.
Fuck Whoa. You.
Terrible. Terrible.
Fuck you.
Millington gets the flask and puts it in the Ultima machine and then goes out to talk to Soren because Soren has met up with his men because he's supposed to go there to steal stuff. He goes up and is like, I'm here to talk to your leader or whatever. And Millington goes out and is like, I don't know who you are. And he's like, I'm going to have you arrested. And Soren gives a signal for his men to run away because he says some very obviously like signal phrase like,
yeah,
wolves are in it. He's like, wolves of winter, like wolves of winter. And they all leave. And then Soren is arrested. And then the doctor tells Millington to worry about the vampires and not about the Russians. That's not important right now. The vampires are more important. And he's like, they can melt steel with their bare hands under the sea.
Can they only do it under the sea?
No, I think he's saying that's why they're so strong. They can do that shit under the sea.
So imagine what they can do not under the sea?
Yeah, when they have legs. But then we
see... no voice.
No voice. No voice. Not allowed. Then we see them melting the tunnel doors as well.
Because they just want to be part of our world.
And then we see the scene where Kathleen learns that her husband is dead. And Ace just
reads that letter.
Ace just takes the knife and jabs it in Kristen Shaw's heart. And then proceeds to just turn it clockwise like 17 times. But the reason that I mentioned that is the merchant convoy stuff that her husband was on was particularly vulnerable to attacks by U-boats hunting in wolf pack formation. In fact, one principal objective in cracking the Enigma code was to protect the convoys from the wolf packs.
I really feel like someone wanted this episode to be about werewolves.
They got the wrong one. Then Ace confronts the doctor. This is so good. She's like,
oh, this scene.
You're like, it's like you're playing a game that only you know the answers to, and then you're not letting me in on shit. What's going on? Fuck you. He basically is like, this was an evil created at the beginning of time, and I put it in a flask.
Evil since the dawn of time. And then I bottled it.
The doctor really, at this time period, came up with a lot of temporary solutions. I put it in a rocket ship and I shot it into orbit, and it's gonna come back around every so many years. But I'll deal with it when I deal with it.
That's a problem for future me.
I put it in a flask. I don't remember what happened to the flask.
Oh my god.
I didn't really 100% think it through. I was just giving myself some time. And then I forgot!
Well, this happened with the Hand of Omega.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This happened in Silver Nemesis.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This has happened now.
What shit has the doctor got in motion that he's... It's just completely forgotten about. So anyway, Ace is like, well, we should get Soren's help to fight this thing. We should break him out. And she's like, I can take care of that. I can distract the guard while you get him. And he's like, how? And she's like, doctor, I'm not a little girl.
Oh, and this leads to a scene.
Ace distracts a guard by seducing him? And it's also a metaphor about time travel. It's about sex and it's about time travel. And here's the thing. I don't think it's bad. Sophie Aldred is actually giving a decent performance.
It's so intense, though.
It is very intense, but she's smiling. She's being, like, flirty. The problem with the scene, I think, personally, is that the guy playing the guard looks like a fucking idiot. He looks just like, what? Huh? Like, the whole time. And, like, If you just read those lines and if they're both being flirty, the scene makes sense.
Okay, I want to run the scene.
You want to run the scene?
I want to run the scene.
Oh, shit.
I was going to say, I have to admit that if someone came up to me, especially a random someone that I did not know, that I had just like seen around, and said some of the things that she said to him, I also would be like, what are we doing?
This guy's name is Lay or Lee? Sergeant Lee?
I want to be Lee.
Okay.
I want to see how you read that sentence in a flirty way.
And I mean, I think she does a fine job. I think she's fine. Like, being a little intense is fine. It's his lines that are bad.
Are you looking for someone?
No. You. And then she leaves, and he follows her.
That's flirty.
Okay, yeah. Right there, we're fine. Like, that tracks.
There's a wind whipping up. I can feel it through my clothes. Is there a storm coming?
That's weird.
I can see that. Like, she delivers it with enough flirtatiousness. I can buy that, like, as sexy talk.
And I think originally it was a different line that they had to change because everyone on the set kept laughing so hard.
Oh, because it was about...
Because it was about how hot it was. Yeah, well, how hot she was.
It was how hot she was, and it was fucking freezing on location. And she was talking about how hot she was and literally shivering visibly. And so the writer came up with a new line to make it work a bit better.
I wasn't expecting one.
The question is he making all the right moves or only going through the motions?
I see.
That's where I get lost.
She's talking about the doctor, but she's saying it in a way that's about this guy. Is he making all the right moves? Is he going to successfully flirt with her?
But she's saying it to him.
I mean, in the third person.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
You have to move faster than that if you want to keep up with me. Faster than light, which moves at the speed of thought.
It moves at the speed of ghost.
Faster than the second hand on a watch?
Much faster. We're not even moving yet. Hardly cruising speed. Sometimes I move so fast, I don't exist anymore.
What Can you see?
See, the thing is, like the thing
how
is,
how do you read it then?
I mean, that faster than the second hand on a watch, that sounds like he's playing along. But the way the guy delivers it, he just sounds confused.
That's true.
He's like, that's true. Wait, you move faster than the second hand on a watch? Like, he's legitimately concerned.
I cannot.
Not that he's, like, flirting with her. That he's like, what the fuck?
That's too fast! Slow down!
Whoa, you're going way too fast!
I cannot conceive of anything that moves faster than 1 second per second.
And then, of course, she's talking about, like moving fast, like, sexually.
But she's also not moving. Like, there was the one flirty run, which, okay, cool.
Well, no, I mean, she's saying, like, metaphorically she's
moving
fast.
I know, but there's nothing to back up that metaphor. She just flips into metaphor randomly and for
that
no
feels
reason.
Like a dream.
Yeah.
No, it's like you're flirting. It's like you're talking about one thing, but you're kind of secretly talking about another thing. But there's no,
I mean,
no text for the meta text.
She doesn't need to be physically moving fast. She's
but
saying,
you know what I'm saying?
No.
You have to move fast, like.
Okay, so like, here's the thing.
You have to be.
For it to be subtext, there has to be text. But they're just speaking in subtext.
Well, no. Yeah. To me, what the issue is that for that to occur, there needs to be text and subtext. For the flirting to happen, she needs to be talking about something that is not sexy, or, you know, not directly like "come fuck me by the shed."
Well, I mean,
is the sexy line, the sexy through line. But the weird thing about what she's doing is the sexy stuff is the text, and the subtext is random meta shit.
I mean, yeah, it's about time travel.
Right. And, like, that, I think, is the disconnect in my head. Because, like, you're throwing in subtext that you don't have to.
I mean, I think it's fine. Because, I mean, I think she's being very foreign is what she's being. She's like, he's flirting with her, but badly. And she's like, you're going to have to move faster than that if you want to catch me, basically. If you want. And then he's trying to flirt.
Then you're right. Then this whole thing is predicated on being able to tell that he is flirting back.
And he doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he was flirting back, this scene would work a lot better. I'm not saying it's like the greatest dialogue in the world, maybe. But I think I kind of like what it's doing. And I just think he's delivering it so fucking poorly.
I just think that the text and the subtext are flipped. And that throws the whole scene out of whack and into this weird dream space.
I think it's fine. Because, like, I think she's purposely coming on. Like, I mean, she's not even coming on that hard.
Okay, but
she's
can,
like,
you read the next line? What can you see?
Undercurrents, bringing things to the surface.
So sexy.
Like, the sexual undercurrents coming to the surface. They're going to fuck. That's what she's saying. And then she's like, I can't stay. And he's like, you promised.
When did she promise?
When did she promise?
What did she promise?
I feel like there's flirting that we didn't see.
Yes, there is. Because we cut to the doctor breaking Soren out. And then we come back to them.
Okay.
Is that when... Okay. Is that when it was sexy?
I'm saying it does feel very dreamy and weird. And while I was watching it, I was like, this is weird. But I think it's solely his fault. I think she's fine. I think he just looks like a confused person, which makes me feel confused. Because, like, it feels like he's in a different scene. Or I don't know. I feel like he doesn't understand what's happening.
She definitely feels like she's on a completely other level than this guy. And that's part of what makes it feel, like, dreamlike and weird.
Yeah, I think it would work if she kept doing what she was doing. But he was, like, trying to match her energy. But she's like, you can't match
You're
my energy.
Not even close to matching my energy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think he could be a little more goofy, maybe. Like, trying to flirt, but bad at it. But really, all he's doing is like, whoa? The whole time. He's delivering all of his lines like he doesn't know what they mean.
I don't think he does.
I don't think he does. Yeah. But I think he's supposed to be flirty.
I don't think he knows what her lines mean.
Exactly. Same. I think that scene could work if that guy had just delivered his lines better. Anyway, the vampires break out of the tunnel and come for the Reverend, and he's restored his faith, and it works.
Until it doesn't.
And then it doesn't, and then he gets... My notes say, the Reverend restores his faith, but then quickly loses it to death.
Yeah, he's like, we will see if my faith is strong enough. Oh, it wasn't. Okay.
And they kill him. They apparently shoved him down and then walked over him and trampled him into the mud.
What?
He's like, he didn't blame him. He's like, it was very, very muddy that day.
Aww.
And like, yeah, they can't see. They got these big fucking masks on and shit. He was fine. And then the machine, the Ultima machine, lightning strikes it. Like, it comes out of the machine. Lightning comes out of the machine and strikes Judson.
Justin Judson.
Justin time.
Justin Judson.
Justin Wolf time. his wheelchair flies against the back of the wall. The doctor and Ace rush in, and then, you know, Millington starts spouting some shit, and Ace is like, we're too late.
Yeah, Millington's already become the host for Fenric. Because one thing I don't think that we've established within the podcast is that Fenric needs a body. Like, in order... Like
Ace was trying to get.
Yeah. Once his juice is freed, then he needs a body to crawl into.
And Ace thinks that Millington has done it. But guess what? Incorrect. Judson, the paralyzed man, stands up behind the doctor, and his eyes glow.
We play the contest again, Time Lord.
That's a good fucking
cliffhanger. That is a good cliffhanger. That's the one cliffhanger that you should have fucking kept. The rest of them, give me my other episode.
Like, it would have been a good enough cliffhanger if he just, like, time to play the contest again, but the fact that he says, Time Lord, you're like, oh, shit!
Yeah, you get hit, like, three times. Like, one, he stands up, which I think you see coming, because, you know, clearly, like, Ace thinking Millington was Fenric was a misdirect. But then he stands up and he's like, we play the contest again. And then he tags it with Time Lord. It's like, ah, shit. Shit's about to go down.
And then it does in episode 4, which I have called The Sound of Dying.
I've called it The Game of Traps.
Oh, nice. Then we get a brief scene of Kristen Shaw singing When the Bow Breaks with the oddest fucking melody I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't know what is happening there.
Has she never heard the song?
I don't know if it was
a British
thing.
Could
they not clear it?
I didn't know if it was like a copyright thing.
Is she just doing a jazz version? What's happening? But she's trying to soothe the baby while, like, lightning is happening and stuff. So I'm just going to start calling this guy Fenric. It's not, he's not Judson anymore. He's Fenric.
He's Justin Fenric.
Justin Fenric. He's like, peace out, y'all. And then blows up in a big white thing and the broom blows everywhere and he's gone. And he reappears out with the Phyllis and Jean and all the vampires.
Which was an actual physical effect.
Ooh.
Like, he literally teleported. No. The glass exploding behind him was resin glass. Because he was facing away from it, it was deemed safe enough that he wouldn't, like, get any in his face or anything. And he was like, I want to do the stunt. So they blew it up right behind him.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's cool. The contacts are a practical effect as well.
Yes, and he did not take well to those.
You can tell. He's, like, blinking a lot.
Yes. Which it kind of works because, as the episode progresses, the idea is that Fenric is too powerful for this body to contain for long. And so, like, by the end of the episode, when Judson's eyes are bloodshot and everything from wearing the contacts, like, it works for the character.
And it like reflects something, so it looks like it's glowing. It doesn't work super well on him. It works super well.
They did a different thing. Tomek Bark, or what was his name? Tomek Bork, the guy who plays the
Soren?
Yeah, the notable Russian soldier. They did a different thing with his. He also had contacts, but I think he took better to contacts than the ones that Judson had. And so they were able to do a different kind of lighting trim on those, which is why that effect pops more.
Fenric goes and meets the vampires and tells them to summon the Ancient One. Also, the Ancient One is referred to as the Great Serpent. Isn't there a Great Serpent in Flux?
There's the dude, just a random dude.
With the snake tattoo?
Yeah.
Random dude with the snake tattoo.
Yeah.
So the Doctor, Ace, and Soren are ordered to be executed. They're lined up against a wall and guns are pointed at them. Ace screams, Mom, I'm sorry! Right before they're going to get shot, but then they are saved by the Russians.
apologize for nothing.
Mom, I didn't mean it. I'm still not sorry. You're still a bitch.
She yells, Mom, I'm sorry. And then the baby's like, what?
Yeah.
And the doctor's like, I really need to play chess. So they try to figure out where to get a chess set. So the ancient one is summoned by Jean and Phyllis. They do their little claws and he comes up out of the water and he's just a big old fish boy.
I like how much of this episode he spends just standing around.
Just chilling.
This guy's like 6'5" and they never film him where you can see how fucking tall he is. You never see him up next to somebody. He just looks like a regular dude.
You would never get the sense that he was that tall. And one note about the prosthetics that they're wearing, they put seeds in the molds to give it some texture and stuff. They didn't realize it, but the seeds sprouted and like had little tendrils go through the mold before it solidified. So when they pulled them out, there was like this veininess that they didn't intend, but it was a really cool effect.
And then there's a great scene where Fenric is talking about like how he enjoys the sounds of dying, and it's more about the quantity than the quality.
Don't interrupt me while I'm eulogizing.
Yes! Such a good line.
Yeah.
And then that's when he's like, the doctor pulled some shit out of the sand and made these pieces and then fucked my life over.
Yeah, the doctor like whittled the original chess set that he and Fenric played with.
Did the doctor invent chess?
I was going to say, I mean, the doctor like whittled them out of bone in a desert, I think.
Whatever the hell that means. That's super like fucking mythology shit right there.
But yeah, I mean, Fenric is an evil from before time. So I guess chess just existed objectively?
Oh yeah, chess existed before time.
Chess is an objective truth of the universe.
Yeah, and that one rule where the pawns can team up, that was lost to time.
They cut that one out of the rule book because Fenric figured it out.
Well, no, he couldn't figure it out, and the doctor was like, I don't want him to figure it out, so when I tell somebody about this cool game that I made up, I'm just gonna nix that.
So, but the doctor needs a chess set, so they know Millington has one, and
I love this scene.
They go in there to Millington's office, and then Ace starts getting the pieces immediately, and the doctor's like, oh, no, and she's knocked over one of those green vials, and like smoke starts pouring out, and the doctor puts a trash can over the top of it, and Ace's like, that's so stupid. If it had been me, I'd break some dynamite underneath the table. And then they like stop for a second. They look under the table and there's dynamite. And then they run out and jump into like a, behind like a, I don't know, they jump into like a,
a little barrier.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the place explodes and like a piece of it hits the fucking camera.
Yeah.
They barely got out of the way of that. I feel like that was a dangerous stunt. Not the only dangerous stunt we'll see in this episode, but still.
Oof. They both wanted to do that stunt themselves.
Of course.
And because they're both insane.
Even after Sophie almost died.
Even after McCoy caught on fire, they're still like, I want to fucking do this. And so the idea was they would run, and when they got to a safe distance, then the explosives would be triggered. But I think that the explosives were maybe overcompensating a bit, because, wow. Yeah, that debris clearly hits the camera and shakes it.
It's so violent. It looks cool, though. It
looks great.
And then they get up and they have a scene where they're, I don't know what they're talking about, but they're cleaning each other and it's adorable. Wiping the soot off of each other's faces. So cute. I think they're talking about the names again. God, yeah. The fucking names. I think he says Kathleen's last name. And then Ace is like, she has a chess set. I saw her packing it when her husband was dead.
By the way, have I read you her letter yet? I keep it right here so that I can inflict it on other people.
So they run to go get her chess set. There's like battling going on during all this. They've got the poison and grenades that they're using. All of the Russians have died except for Soren and one of his men, whose name I did not bother to write down. But
the
I
cute
think.
One.
There's the one Russian and there's one British guy named Bates. I wrote that one down because it was easier to pronounce. I'm so terrible. But Bates overhears Fenric call the Ancient One the Great Serpent, and that he's going to take out the entire world with poison.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, he also sees like that Millington is with, that he's Team Fenric.
Yeah. And he's like, well, I can't be a part of this. So he joins forces with Soren. Like, Soren shows up, and he's like, how about we fight the bigger enemy? And Soren's like, that sounds like a great idea.
He nearly busted his ass, by the way. You were talking about how much, how muddy and shit it was. when he runs up and points his gun at the doctor and Ace, you can see him, his foot nearly just goes out from under him, and he goes down.
And then there's another scene where Soren just gives Ace a piece of his clothes. He gives Ace his badge, his little communist badge thing. I feel like just written, how it's written, it's just like him being like, you're a part of the revolution too, kiddo. But like the way they play it is like, I love you.
Yeah, this is like, I am proposing to you.
And he like kisses her hand. And I feel like that's 100% them and not in the script. I could be wrong. I mean, him giving her the badge is probably in the script. But like
the romantic
way they're doing it, I feel is like all them.
Apparently the actor Tomek Bork and Sophie Aldred became really close. It was so cold on set that to keep warm between takes, Sophie Aldred would run to him and cuddle with him in his greatcoat because there was room enough for two people. And so he dubbed himself her official body warmer. And I think that that relationship eked its way onto screen.
It did it in a way I don't care for.
Yeah, it's very random. It's very Leela at the end of her run being like, I'm going to marry this random asshole.
Or Joe at the end of her thing, where she's like, I guess I'm going to marry this asshole.
Yeah.
But the Wrens, the women who listen to the codes, are turned into vampires, and they kill some soldiers. And it's just, everybody's dying.
In the original version of the script, all of the humans died.
They deserved it.
Yeah.
Well, I assume not all of them.
No, I mean, everybody but Ace and the Doctor.
Probably Audrey made it out, too.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe. Again, that's that the soldiers that burst in on the Wrens, like, they go in and the Wrens are, in timeout for some reason. They're just, like, turned around and facing a wall. And then when the soldiers burst in, they're like, Ring!
You gotta be dramatic when you're a vampire.
Yeah. And again, like, one soldier is smart and runs the fuck away. And the other one is like, vamp pussy. And stays there long enough to just get mobbed and eaten.
That's how it is. Just men are stupid.
Yeah.
But the doctor gets the chest set from Kathleen and then heads out. But Ace stays behind with Kathleen and the baby. Oh, and this is a good scene. Fenric takes some vampires into his nurse, Crane, his previous nurse. Yeah. And he's like, she was very terrible to me when I was Judson, and you should kill her. This is what Judson would have wanted. And then as they're killing her, he straight up looks right at the camera and is just like giving the biggest, goofiest smile. Like, killed her ass. Take that, ableism.
Vampires say disability rights.
Millington, meanwhile, shoots the penultimate Russian. I just like saying penultimate. As the Russian is trying to destroy the Ultima machine. He shoots him. He does not kill him.
Yeah, I want to point out this is the cute one.
This is the one that Matt has a crush on.
Yeah.
They're like hiding out in this bunker. They've like Ace and Kathleen have moved all the beds around to keep the vampires out. And this is when Ace talks about Ghostlight.
Yeah, Gabriel Chase and the evil of the house.
And she gets to say undercurrents again. And then they escape. They go out the window as the vampires are coming in. And then Ace puts Kathleen in a car and says, go to this certain address in Perryvale and my mom will take care of you.
My nan,
yeah.
Kathleen's like, okay, but before you go, I want you to take this. And just pulls like a full like...
It's a glamour shot of the baby. It's like the baby's publicity photo.
So fucking huge. She's like, I want you to have this. And then... And again, I feel like Ace knows, but she doesn't know. But she's like, I'll always love you, she says to the baby. And then she's like, sends her away.
Here, have this glossy 8x10 to remember her by.
And because I knew that was her mom, this scene doesn't happen. But this is what I thought was going to happen. She turns around with the gigantic photo of a baby. And Jean and Phyllis walk up. And, like, it's all ominous. And I was like, ah, her faith in her mom's gonna, like, defeat the vampires. But that doesn't happen. We just cut to Fenric, and he's like, we're gonna poison the whole world. We're gonna poison the water supply. Oh, also, we don't need these vampires anymore. Can you just kill them? And the Ancient One's like, sure. And he puts
No. The Ancient One's like, huh? And Fenric's like, no, yeah, you know how. And the Ancient One's like, oh, yeah, okay.
And he just puts his hands to his temples and kills all the vampires. Just
Professor X's them to death. And they decompose and everything.
Oh, it's very gross.
It is very moist.
Their skulls glow and then they just collapse in on themselves. Yeah. And then the doctor leaves Fenric a chess puzzle. He's like, here you go, figure this out. And like Fenric is just obsessed with it. And the doctor goes and has a chat with the Ancient One. And then we get a scene where Millington almost shoots
Bates, the last British guy, but then the wounded penultimate Russian shoots him first and kills Millington. Millington's dead.
Thank God.
And then Bates and the Russian guy hug each other. And
but the pawns are fighting together now, eh, comrade?
And I'm like, now kiss!
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They had far more chemistry than Ace and Soren.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
I agree. I was making GIFs today, and I was like watching that scene. I was like, man, they have a lot of chemistry.
They do! They do! And they get so close. Yeah. So close. Just kiss. Just... Go come in the water.
But the doctor talks to the ancient one about how he's, you know, we learn he's like from the fucked up, polluted future, and that Fenric brought him back here to actually start that future. Like, some weird fucking paradox. We find out, like, basically the Ancient One's been trying to track this flask down because Fenric brought him to the past, and, like, Fenric's the only way he can get back to his future.
So he's just been chilling in the water for a while, I guess.
Because he's basically, I was the last living thing on the planet. Everything had, like, died off due to pollution.
And I'm sad about it.
Fenric has moved him back here to actually have him start it by making all these vampires and stuff. And, like, so by stopping it, like, he won't exist anymore. Like, that future no longer exists. The Hemophores will not happen, well, presumably.
That's good. I didn't want to be a vampire.
But, like, then how...
I'd like to be a sexy vampire, but not, like, a sucker vampire.
He stopped it from happening, so he shouldn't have been able to come back. I don't think it makes sense. Anyway.
You can't start thinking about time travel logic now.
No.
Right. We're way too deep into Doctor Who for you to go this way.
Yeah, I feel like the time to board that train has passed.
All right, I'm moving on. So Soren comes in and talks to Fenric and learns that he is also a fellow Wolf of Fenric, because he's like, do you know why you were put on this mission? I arranged it.
Well, I think this is where we get the explanation for what the wolves are, right? Like, this is where he's saying, like, the ancestors or the descendants of the original Viking are all tied to me. That's the curse. And I can, like, use them.
Use their bodies. And he wants to use... I think he wants to switch over to Soren because Soren is younger and...
Yeah, Judson's decomposing. Those contacts are really getting to him.
And then Ace sees the Bates and the penultimate Russian working together. That's when they have their cute scene. And then that's like, she's like, oh, that's the winning move. You got to work together. And then she immediately goes in and sees Soren and is like, I'm going to tell it to you.
Soren hunched over the chessboard obsessively. Judson nowhere to be seen.
This is the second time this serial that Ace has just blurted out the solution to something to someone who does not need to know the solution to something.
Well, I should point out the first time was a good move. Like, because the doctor failed to tell her,
right,
we're keeping a piece of information from Judson, which she justifiably calls the doctor out on when she finds out there is more information
this
that he is being kept.
Fully on her, though.
Yeah. This one just makes no sense. This is 100% Ace's culpable on this one.
Because he's like, ah... cool, the pieces work together. And he stands up and his eyes glow green
for some reason. Judson's glue
red.
Glue.
Glue is not how that word works. Glowed red.
You're right, it is. It's glowed.
He's Fenric now, and he turns around. Lightning fucking strikes the chessboard and catches on fire
through the roof, I guess.
Yeah. It's very dramatic. Right. Do what?
Hmm?
What'd you say?
Nothing.
Oh, first he knocks over the king, and then...
Yeah.
Through the roof and underground.
Oh, Gogol Bordello.
Thank you.
And then Fenric is like, let me see that picture you got of that baby. You know who this baby is? It's your fucking mom!
Don't understand why the reveal plays out like this. Why is it another character being like, that baby's your mom? I'm going to talk about it for 20 minutes.
Baby's your mom, dumbass.
Why does Fenric know that she hates her mom?
No, well, he's been involved in her whole fucking thing. Okay. She's a wolf.
Yeah, Fenric's like, oh, and by the way, where's another wolf? There's another wolf. It's
wolf
you.
Time.
And he
wolf
tells,
time, baby.
He tells the Ancient One to kill her, but he can't because Ace has total faith in the doctor.
I can't.
Mm. I can't even talk about this scene. I don't want to. Can we skip it?
No, we gotta go. So Fenric threatens, like, to drop some poison and kill everybody, and he, unless the doctor kneels for him.
Well, he threatens to kill Ace.
Yeah, and he's like, I will kill her with this poison, so kneel or I'll kill Ace. And then the doctor says, kill her.
Yeah, just 100% coldly, just kill her.
And then this is when we get a whole bunch of, like, exposition. We learn that Fenric did the chesses. The doctor's like, yeah, I know you've been involved. You were involved, like, the chessboard at Lady Painfort's, and he's like, oh, I was there before that. So basically, he caused the time storm that took Ace to the future, that also, like, that took Lady Painfort to the future, for whatever reason. I guess just defeat the doctor or whatever. But yeah, he's the one who brought Ace to the future so that she would meet the doctor, so that he could get out of the flask, I guess. Yeah, he did all that shit. And then the doctor's like, yeah, I know. And he's like, I knew she had that evil in her the moment I saw her. Why else do you think I would let her join up with me? Like, this social misfit.
This emotional cripple. She wasn't even smart enough to pass her exams. How could she possibly have created a time storm in her bedroom?
He's like, why would I have her unless I was using her? And Ace just lets out this tremendous, like, no.
She collapses to the floor.
She does.
Oh, I hate it so much.
But this allows the Ancient One to get past her, because he was basically blocked by Ace. And the Ancient One goes up to Fenric. Doesn't really throw him. He just sort of, like, walks towards him. And Fenric stupidly walks inside.
He menaces him toward the contained booth.
Yeah, and then he breaks the Ancient One breaks the big vial and kills both of them, presumably. And then the doctor tries to get Ace to go, and she's like, leave me alone, and he drags her out. And then the place explodes, and then she's like weeping in the mud outside, and he's like, I explained that he had to break her faith in him to solve this problem, which maybe the fucking Ancient One could have just took the long way around. Jesus.
Like, there was a narrow space. It was basically the universe was about to be doomed by blocking. and Ace was like emotional constipation.
He's like, you gotta believe me, I didn't mean any of it. And does the little boop on the nose that he's actually done it like 4 times in this serial.
And I should point out that it's a testament to how good this era is at casting the Doctor in a very gray space that he explains to Ace, like, I had to break your faith in me. You know, I had to say these horrible things, but I don't know that he doesn't believe them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Like, there's that ambiguity there. She forgives him pretty quickly, like quicker than I would. But yeah, when he's apologizing to her, you don't get a firm sense necessarily that it is actually 100% a lie.
I will say, on the behind the sofa thing, Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred are watching it. She's like, you're saying all these mean things or whatever. And he's like, well, the thing is, they're true. And she's like, what? And he's like, well, you're a social misfit. And that's way more interesting.
Yeah.
It better be a social misfit than a boring person. That's fun. And I was like, I like Sylvester McCoy. Then there's one final scene where Ace and the Doctor
at Maiden's Point Bay.
And she's talking about, like, how can she still hate her mom when she loves that baby and everything, and she's very conflicted, and basically she baptizes herself, I guess, into growing up. There's a very dangerous stunt.
I don't understand where this fits into the sex metaphor. Does she have to have sex in order to love her mom?
No, I mean, it's just about growing up. It's just about being more mature. But she dives into the water, which looks like an incredibly dangerous stunt, and then swims around.
It is. She had to literally time the way that the waves were coming in, because only when the waves came in and peaked did it even have a chance of her not just, like, impaling herself on the rocks under the water. Like, it was that shallow.
I watched the, like, footage of that, and you, like, see her dive into the water, and then, like, a split second later, fucking, like, guy in a diving suit just jumps in to make sure she's okay. But yeah, she swims around, and then you hear a lot of, like, voices.
You hear voices, and they're ones of, like, Ace saying, you hear her saying that she loves her mother. You hear her, I think, mother talking to her. There was supposed to be a third voice where she says she hates her mother. And the idea being that none of the voices won. She came to an acceptance that she did both love and hate her mother, and that was just how things were going to be. that darker side to it kind of got mixed out.
That's how you beat the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy text adventure, is you have to have both tea and no tea in your inventory.
Tea, no tea, and acceptance.
Yeah. And then she pops up out of the water and she feels better, and then there's no more dangerous undercurrents.
She's been baptized in blood water sex.
Ooh, blood water, coming of age, periods.
Placenta.
Horse pussy.
Had to say it one more time, huh?
Right here at the end. That's the end of the episode, fuckers. Thanks for listening to Curse of Eric.
This cursed ass episode. This episode of Cursed and Horny has been brought to you
by... That really, really set the tone. Yeah.
It really fucking did. But that's it. That's the end of the episode. That's the end of the serial. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for final thoughts.
Winter is coming. Prepare with a fine cigar and listen to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. We smoke cigars and talk about movies and all kind of nerdy things. Available at CigarNerdPodcast.com. Also on the ESO Network at ESONetwork.com.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
It's time for final thoughts.
Holy shit, you did it. Here in our penultimate episode.
It's 11 p.m. and I'm very sleepy.
What are your final thoughts?
I'm going to start with the good stuff. As always, it's that the Doctor and Ace are fucking killing it. They're so good at what they do. And having the conflict between them. God, we've tried to have conflict between, like, companions and the Doctor and companions before. And it's been so annoying. Like, it's so shallow. This is good. This is... people feeling betrayed and people where you're like, yeah, they're right. And what are you going to do about it? And even what Matt was saying in, you know, the thing where the doctor's like, I had to break my faith and I had to lie. There's nothing in what he said that was an outright lie. Like, he probably did know, you know, how the time storm got caused. He probably does think that she's a social misfit. All the other stuff is like, it's true. The doctor just doesn't think that's a bad thing. But God, it fucking hurts. Those scenes really hurt, and they're so good. They're so good to watch. I will say, a lot of the, like, I always get a little bit, like, alienated with coming-of-age stories that particularly focus on sex because of reasons. So, it makes me feel a very similar feeling of, you know, growing up and everybody hitting that age and me being like, I don't know what everyone's talking about. And this, like... so weirdly perfectly, like, replicates that by having, like, these weird stilted flirting scenes. It's weird to think about, but somehow this serial recreates the feeling of, like, being Ace and coming of age. Like, I don't know fully what's happening, but I think it's a metaphor for sex. I don't know what people are talking about. I'm just gonna assume it's sex and move on.
Well, that's why she's called Ace.
Yeah. I had a weird experience watching this one. So I do also appreciate that there's this other stuff with, like, you know, coming to terms with the fact that, like, your parents are people who tried their best and fucked up, and that, like, both of those things are true. You don't have to let go of either one feeling about that. You know, you can love them for trying their best, and you can be hurt in the ways that you were hurt, and that's okay. That stuff totally resonated. I hope my mom doesn't listen to this podcast. She won't. It's 3 hours long. There's no way she got to this part. So yeah, I mean, beyond that, this is another one where it's like, God, we've got some incredible acting scenes, some, like, juicy, like, meaty themes. Shut up. Don't be gross. Shut up. Let me finish my fucking thought, you pervert.
Sorry. Is it horse meat?
Okay, I'm good. Go.
But kind of just like a mess of a plot where, like, things are happening and it's like, don't think about any one thing too hard and it's fine. And yeah, those are my final thoughts.
Matt, what are your final thoughts?
I adore this one. This is probably my favorite Doctor Who classic serial. The first time that I saw this, I saw it in the extended movie cut.
It's better. I haven't watched it yet. But.
I remember walking away from it just being blown away. I walked away from watching this version, the broadcast version, with a lot more questions. But they were questions I didn't have after I watched the movie version. I don't know if I am misremembering that movie version or if a lot of the issues that that were introduced in this watch were just answered in those extra scenes. But this is just fantastic Doctor Who to me. This is the perfect use of the Doctor. This is the perfect use of the Companion. This is an absolute showcase for Sophie Aldred and Sylvester McCoy. As guests on the podcast go, you've got people who do Cybermen episodes, people who do Dalek episodes. I feel like I'm the one that does Ancient Awakening Evil episodes, because that is just very much my bag.
It's a good niche.
Yeah, like this is just my thing. Like, I fucking adore this. So
I think we did the diamonds before we knew you. So
yeah,
sorry.
Which I hadn't seen that until recently, but
I bet you loved it.
Yes, I did, because of that very thing. You know, it's very hard to make that kind of story work on a Doctor Who budget and on a Doctor Who timetable. And I think this is probably the best representation of that. Like, I think this is the most successful evocation of this ancient conflict that really feels much larger than just the four episodes that we got. And I attribute that highly to Andrew Cartmell, who, you know, was fantastic at bringing in writers and having a plan before they just went and made episodes. And so having those kind of antecedents sprinkled throughout previous episodes really made this one feel like it built up to, this was a climax. This was a, but I mean, this whole thing, the setting, the mythological aspects, less so the sex ones, but everything just really works together to me. And especially in that uncut movie, especially in that extended, doesn't work either. Fuck. We have really fucked ourselves into a corner on this one. The longer...
Omnibus.
No. Yes. Especially in that omnibus version. If you could take certain episodes, certain serials of Doctor Who, and make them movie events, this would be one of them. Mm. This would be like a giant capper to not only the season, but also a good chunk of the classic series. This really feels like an ending in a way. We've still got one episode to go. We've still got one story to go. But this feels like the emotional payoff to so much of the Seventh Doctor and Ace's story in a way that a lot of other Doctors and Companions never got.
I guess it's my turn, huh?
Yeah.
Let's see if I can get through my final thoughts without making any unfortunate sexual innuendo.
Well, you don't have to. We can do that for you.
I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was super good. It was very moody. Just the horror aspects work very well. There is definitely some like dream logic type stuff happening, but I kind of enjoy that. It gives it this otherworldly feel to it. I didn't mind the sexual stuff. I thought that was fine. I mean, some of it's a little clunky maybe, but it's vampires. You get vampires are about sex. That's just how it is. I'm sorry. But yeah, the Doctor and Ace are so fucking good. I am glad that this takes place after Ghostlight and not before it, because this definitely feels like a culmination of Ace's arc. Because it's got like, it talks about how she started and this is where she ends up. I feel like if you put Ghostlight after this, Ghostlight would maybe feel less interesting because of that. I don't know. It feels like it's retreading, maybe.
This feels like the full catharsis of her.
Yeah. Ghostlight feels like it's setting up
the
catharsis. Because, like, she's still confused about things and then she takes a dip. But I don't know how that's going to pay off in Survival. Maybe that one I'll be like, no, wait, no, this one is actually the culmination of the... But we'll see. But yeah, I loved it. I loved the vampires. I loved the... I thought the plot was really good. I loved the ripoff of Salem's Lot. Yeah. Just everything came together really well. I'm interested. I want to watch the omnibus version as well at some point. Give that a gander. I liked it. I thought it was really good. And that's the episode. Before we go, Matt, is there anything you'd like to plug? Don't say you want to plug the horse pussy.
I'm trying not to. Not my thing, but no shame for anyone who is, just follow me on Twitter, at E.M. Golden. You can check out my work, such as it is, at matthewgolden.xyz or matthewgolden.xyz if you are listening to this in England or Canada, I guess.
And if you like this episode, check out more on whatyourassalon.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wishlist, and more at linktree.com/watchathon. That's linktr.ee/watchathon. And I want to say a special thanks to our current guest, Matt Golden, for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You're welcome. Or Golden. I really expect the sound effects to just
happen.
I paused waiting for the theme song every single time that I guest on the podcast. So, since I know that it doesn't just happen spontaneously, I somehow expect you to just sing it yourselves. And where did that come from?
Oh, that came from Vincent E.L.
Thanks, Vince.
Hey, thanks, Vince. I got to say hey, thanks.
Yeah. Check out more of their music at vincentel.bandcamp.com. Keep an eye out on Vince, too, because they might be a washing machine soon. I don't...
They may be coming to a washing machine near you.
And tune in next time when we talk about the last ever classic Doctor Who serial, Survival.
The inaptly named Survival.
Oh!
Too soon.
I mean, it's literally my entire lifespan. Yeah. But until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic parasocial way.
Goodbye, and horse pussy.
No! God damn it!
I was going to say it if Matt didn't, so...
damn it!
You have to move faster than that if you want to keep up with me. Faster than light.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.